Request that the proceedings of the briefing session are electronically recorded, and also that a live broadcast will be provided in line with the changes to the city's briefing session procedures, which were adopted by the council on the 20th of September 2022, with the exception of matters of a confidential nature. Members of the public gallery are reminded that it is a requirement under the meeting procedure local law to act in a courteous and respectful manner at all times within the council chamber. This includes showing respect to anybody who is exercising their right to ask questions of the council and or deliver public statements, as it does towards elected members at times where they're asking questions, or to officers who may be giving a presentation or answering questions. I also just take a brief moment to remind everybody that under our rules, I will enforce any adverse reflections on councillors or officers. As for any reflections on those who do not fit within that definition, I remind people again that briefing sessions are recorded and the city does not take responsibility for any statements made during either deputations, public question time or public statement time from members of the public. The first item of business is declarations of interest. I've received a number. First of all, from Councillor Hamilton Prime. Is there any particular reason why the doors have been closed? Thank you. First of all, from Councillor Hamilton Prime for item 12.17, Community Funding Program. It's an interest that may affect impartiality, as Councillor Hamilton Prime is a member of the Padbury Garden. A further one for item 12.6, E-Rideable Share Services in the City of Joondalup, also from Councillor Hamilton Prime, interest that may affect impartiality, as she owns a scooter and is an admin of the WA Scooter Enthusiasts Group. Further declaration from Councillor Hamilton Prime for item 12.2, Mary Road Duncraig. It's an interest that may affect impartiality, as Scott Greenwood and employees of Hawaiian are known to Councillor Hamilton Prime. Declaration from Councillor Raftus for item 13.1.3, local planning strategy phase 2 outcomes and phase 3 scope. It's an interest that may affect impartiality, as Councillor Raftus owns and resides in a property within HOA 4. Declaration from myself for item 12.13, list of payments. It's an interest that may affect impartiality, as I do part-time work for Thompson Gear and do not work on City of Joondalup matters. And second declaration from myself for item 12.18, tender for Percy Doyle T-Ball. It's an interest that may affect impartiality, as my brother provides electrical subcontracting services to Hickey. Further declaration from Councillor Fishwick for item 13.1.3, local planning strategy review, phase 2 outcomes and phase 3 scope, an interest that may affect impartiality, as Councillor Fishwick is the owner of a property within HOA 1. Councillors, are there any other declarations of interest? Councillor Jones. Other declarations? Councillor Kingston.
Yes, I emailed mine in advance, but I'll read it out, so... I've got an interest that may affect impartiality for item 12.9, so it's the minutes of the AGM, and they are for motion 7, which I am the secretary of the Friends of Yallagonga Regional Park, which has an interest in the management of cats. Motion 13, once again, I am the secretary of the Friends of Yallagonga Regional Park, which is eligible to receive special purpose grants from the city, and motion 16 and 20, because I live adjacent to a public access way. And also on motion 13, I may have a financial interest if Councillor Chester starts talking about increased grant allocations to the Friends groups. And then for item 13.1.4, Woodvale Drive Scheme Amendment, again, I'm the Secretary for the Friends of Yallagonga Regional Park, which has an interest in the management of the adjacent regional park and the conservation category wetland. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. And I had another one actually for you, Councillor Kingston, 13.1.4, also members of the Woodvale Baptist Church are known to you.
That's correct.
Sorry, it was on this one, but not in the printed copies I had. Thank you. Councillor Raftus for item 12.17, community funding, interest that may affect impartialities. Councillor Raftus is also a member of the Padbury Community Garden. Thank you. Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a declaration of independence for impartiality, sorry. I was involved in the petition for the DA removal for the Masonic Village, Malanda Boulevard.
Thank you. And Councillor Chesser.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I own a property in Belden, which is in an HOA.
So, declaration of interest for that item. Thank you, Councillor Chester. Councillor Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My interest that may affect impartiality is I played football with Scott Greenwood from Hawaiian 20 years ago.
Thank you, Councillor Jones. Next item of business, are there any further declarations? Sorry? If not, next item of business, deputations. Deputation requests are to be made in writing and are addressed to the Mayor. A time period of up to 6 minutes is set aside for each deputation this evening. Deputations are not to exceed 5 persons in number. Only 3 of those people are at liberty to address elected members and also to respond to questions that elected members may have if time permits. For our first deputation, I call forward Mr. Carmelo Cirillo for item 12.2.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, councillors and staff. We refer to item 12.2 on the agenda. My name is Camello and together with my wife Vanessa, we are the joint owner-operators of Little H Cafe in Duncraig. Since August of last year, we as a management team introduced a range of internal measures that assisted with scaling back our operations while still allowing us to operate sustainably. For example, we adopted a two-tiered seating capacity structure, 50 seats Monday to Thursday and 60 seats Friday through to Sundays. In our opinion, this approach gives our business flexibility with its seating capacity when it's needed most. We reduce bookings on weekends by adopting a sitting style approach. Using this approach, we can create a 90-minute interval between each sitting. We also cap bookings at approximately 20 heads per sitting, which helps us achieve a better balance between booked and walk-in customers. We increased our use of data. Our point of sale and ordering system allows us to track the length of time customers spend dining in with us in real time. Using this data, we're able to expedite table turnover by focusing our attention on customers who've spent upwards of 90 minutes occupying a table. Where possible, we have reduced the frequency of supply deliveries, which has resulted in reduced traffic movements. We continue to educate our customers verbally and through signage at the cafe against parking illegally. We continue to engage with our neighbours and act on any constructive feedback we've received. We have and continue to do everything that has been asked of us and within our immediate control to demonstrate our willingness to compromise and appease all the key stakeholders of our community. We are playing our part. Additionally, Little H Cafe will be paying for the construction of new public car bays. This represents a significant reinvestment back into our local community, which will not only benefit our request, but will be of great benefit to many in our community for the long term. At a time where we are coping with the cost of living pressures, we'd like to reiterate to Council this evening that we are a young mum and dad family-owned business. So the timing and the size of this investment should not be taken lightly. We've also spent thousands of dollars paying our independently qualified consultants to provide factual data to the City of Joondalup in support of our request. All that we ask for in return is your support for our request, particularly our request to operate with 60 seats Friday through Sundays, for which reasonable justification has been provided. Lastly, we think it's important to highlight the fact that our seating capacity is strictly assessed against the parking supply available to us. This concept continues to confuse us, given we are a neighbourhood business. There is currently no discretion provided for our customers who don't require parking to visit us, such as our residents that live above us or within short walking distance of our cafe. This also includes customers who ride their bikes. We have 9 bike racks on site, e-scooter, work in the area, or walk their dogs, noting that we promote ourselves as a dog-friendly cafe. Therefore, it would be prudent for Council to consider these types of customers in determining our overall seating capacity. We acknowledge that it may be difficult to quantify exactly what that number could or should be, but we believe a small allowance of anywhere between 3 to 5 seats would be appropriate. Thank you for your time and happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Cirillo. I think we've got time for one question. Councillor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. What is your relationship like with the neighbours on the limited street parking around your facility?
Councillor, are you referring to local residents across the road? Yes, so the two residents I'm aware of is number 41 Murray Road, Chris. I've met with Chris several times. I understand he has concerns around
verge parking around the area at times, but my engagement with the Chris have been very amicable, and they've been more around the parking issues around the area more broadly, not necessarily related specifically to Little H Cafe. So I think we've got a good relationship with Chris, which is directly opposite us. He also frequents the cafe. He's also a customer of ours. I think number 37, which is directly opposite the cafe, a bunch of young individuals who rent the property, they also frequent the cafe. Their only ask of us is they acknowledge that, yeah, listen, parking can be of an issue during some periods of the week, but they understand that it's not necessarily our fault, but we're playing our part by putting those signs up to really help the residents in the area. So we have a philosophy where if we see it, we'll police it. But we've also got signs as a gesture of good faith to the community to try and educate the customer not to park, or any kind of our customers not to park illegally.
Thank you, Mr. Shriller. Thank you. For our next deputation, I have Mr. Callum Thatcher and Mr. Scott Greenwood. Also note, I've just received another declaration from Councillor May for item 12.2, being the Mary Road Duncraig reconsideration for Little H, and it is an interest that may affect impartiality as the proprietor of Little H Cafe is known to Councillor May. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, elected members and staff. Thank you for the opportunity to present this evening's briefing session. My name is Callum Thatcher from Element, representing Hawaiian Duncraig Shopping Centre. I also have in attendance with me Mr. Scott Greenwood, General Manager of Shopping Centres from Hawaiian. On behalf of the landowners, we are opposed to any patron expansion of the cafe. Letters of objection have been made to both advertised proposals, expressing our concern with the inability of the cafe to contain its car parking within the confinements of the site and the impact this has had on the small business owners of the Duncraig Shopping Centre. As the City is aware, Hawaiian have been in frequent correspondence with the City regarding the car parking issues at Duncraig Shopping Centre. This has required Hawaiian to take their own action and resort to investigating the issue in further detail. This has included engaging a traffic consultant to complete a car parking audit, as well as reconfiguring and upgrading the centre's car park at an expense of $1.48 million as a result of its increase in usage. It's noted this is of no direct cause from the centre's operation. Given the nature of Lu'ihano Terrace development, its configuration of its on-site car parking bays, Hawaiian already has an uphill battle in managing non-shopping centre users from parking within their car park, withstanding additional variations being approved. We understand it's human nature for consumers to park at the most convenient location. However, this does not mean respective land uses within the immediate locality can operate with limited car parking bays and expect Hawaiian and small businesses within the centre to pick up the bill. This is unacceptable. We simply will not accept that the 13 car parking bays and 5 on-street bays will accommodate the car parking demands associated with the Lu'ihano Terrace development without negatively impacting the Duncraig Shopping Centre's car park. 13 car bays to service 54 cafe patrons, 20 apartment visitors, a Pilates studio and associated staff is simply too high of a demand to service these uses. This is particularly relevant to the circumstance of Duncraig, as private car usage is the clear preferred travel method. This is resulting in Hawaiian's car park being consumed with unaccounted for demands. We strongly refute the solution of providing on-street car parking bays for private gain as an acceptable solution. On-street car parking bays is to provide overflow car parking where an acceptable amount of on-street car parking bays is already being provided. It should not be used as a way to justify a regular occurrence of a lack of on-site car parking bays to service one business's gain. Furthermore, on-street car parking cannot be reserved for one operation, regardless of whether the city or third party is paying for those car parking bays. They can be used by any resident or visitor and are often a valued commodity for residents, particularly where there's medium to high density living within the area. We have large concerns as to how these bays will be used and whether, in fact, these bays will directly benefit the increase in the cafe patron demand that is being proposed before you. We also refute a further variation should be accepted to the on-site car parking bays. The on-site car parking shortfall is being increased to 8 car parking bays. It is important to note the City of June's up car parking ratio of 1 bay per 4 persons is already providing a degree of flexibility for the cafe, as it assumes a best and worst case car parking scenario. For example, the cafe may have 4 separate patrons drive independently equating to a one patron to one bay ratio. And on the other hand, you may have patrons who don't drive at all and walk to the venue, or patrons who arrive together, reducing the car parking rate per person. Effectively, the ratio is there to provide a balance. It's an approximation of the worst case and best case travel scenarios built into the existing car parking rate, which directly benefits the cafe already. In certain weekend periods, over 100 people in 1 hour were recorded walking from the Dunkirk Shopping Centre car park to the cafe. A 1-in-4 ratio is generous, as a generous rate given the dominance of private car usage, and therefore there are no justifiable grounds to support a further shortfall of on-site bays given the leniency of the applied rate. We appreciate Council's time in considering our deputation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thatcher. I think I've got time for one question. Councillor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just two questions real quick. Do you believe that the shopping centre benefits from the Little H customer visitation? And the second question is, if the recommendation is approved, how does this affect the owner and the tenants of the shopping centre?
That's a good question. It's true, Mr. Mayor. In short, to the first question, no. There's no direct correlation between the consumers of Little H Cafe and the shopping centre. And the reason why we know this is Hawaiian had to engage a traffic consultant who stood there and watched people park at the centre's car park and walk to Little H Cafe and then basically get in their car and leave. And there's no shared usage. So we knew this because we obviously monitored. There was 120 people in 1 hour walking from the car park to Little H. And secondly, the amount of vehicles entering the car park was far greater than the amount of pedestrians going into the shopping centre. So there's clearly a direct benefit to the cafe and no direct benefit to Hawaiian. And this is why they've Hawaiian have recognised this issue and provided additional car parking since this issue has arisen. However, there's a limit. And the limit's at 40 patrons, which is the existing approval. The cafe can't expect to continue to expand its operation based on the capacity of the existing development. There's just simply not enough availability of bays to be reliant on Hawaiian's car park to fund their business. In direct response to the second question, I'm sure you've all heard from family members and people that they're discouraged from going to certain shopping centres because car parking is a nightmare or because they don't like the traffic or congestion. That is a key concern with the support of this application or this mediated outcome. When car parks get to about 80 or 90% within the shopping centre, that's when consumers start to turn their back on those centres. That is our key concern with this. Once it gets to a certain volume of cars, customer behaviour changes and they will start looking at alternatives. If another 14 patrons are allowed...
Thank you, Mr. Thatcher.
Yeah, it could be another 10% of usage, which hasn't been accounted for. So appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. For our next deputation, Mr. Carlo Famiano. Also for item 12.2.
Good evening, councillors and mayor and staff. Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. I'm speaking on behalf of the owners of Little H Cafe and welcome the recommendation for approval for the increase to 54 patrons or seats for the cafe. Just to let you know, our original proposal was to have 50 seats during the week and only Friday, Saturday and Sunday have the 60. And that is the figures that Camello needs to operate his business. You may recall this application when it came into for consideration at council back in August of last year. The cafe was running at 80 seats throughout the week, and obviously it caused a lot of issues and angst amongst the residents within the area. Since that period, since council did not support the 80 seats at the time, Camello, as you've heard from him tonight, has made a number of arrangements to change the operations of the cafe to ensure that it doesn't impact the local residents, but at the same time still provide a service and a meeting place for the community to be. I think sometimes we forget that cafes aren't just businesses, they're also meeting places and a community hub where people get to speak and walk their dog and grab a cup of coffee, and that's certainly what Little H Cafe does. In addition to the measures taken by Camello, he's managed to change his supply stream to the cafe, which has reduced the number of deliveries and the number of pickups that occur along Maori Road. So at the end of the day, at the back of his mind, he's always looking at trying to reduce any impact on the local residents. The bays that we're proposing to construct, they're not cheap, and it is coming at a fair cost to Comello. And it's not about just getting the extra numbers to the cafe. It's also about giving to the community. Users of the shopping centre can use it. The local community use those bays. It's not just about the cafe only. Comello is delivering something to the community, and at the same time, he's trying to keep his business running. Just to respond to some of the comments that the Hawaiian made, my concern there is that if they've got parking issues at the moment, when that tavern opens up, they're going to have even greater parking issues. I don't think the additional patronage at Little H Cafe is going to cause huge parking problems compared to what the tavern is going to do when it opens up. And I guess local residents within the area need to be mindful of that, that the cafe at Little H is a drop in the ocean compared to what's coming with the tavern itself. Just in regards to council's consideration of the 60 seats on Friday, Saturday and Sunday, we just hope council looks at the fact that that is only for a small period of time on those days. It is not throughout the entire day, and it's certainly not in the evening. It's only for a small period in the morning and up to lunchtime. The cafe itself closes at 3 o'clock. And one thing we need to highlight, that the existing approval that's in place for this cafe does not have a time limit. It could technically be open till 10 or midnight. Comello is happily agreed to put a condition on to make sure that the cafe does not operate beyond 3 o'clock, so that there's no conflict between other uses within the area, potentially the future tavern, the educational establishment on the same site, and certainly the peak visitor periods of the apartments. So once again, Comello is willing to take to burden his own approval with a time limit. That demonstrates how much he's going to, that he's put into this business and how much he's willing to sacrifice to make sure that his business is operating at an operable level. We also need to consider the fact that we have looked at the parking availability on site, and our own consultant, our own traffic consultant, during the peak periods of Friday, Saturday and Sunday, has clearly demonstrated that there are car parks available on site. They're not all used during those peak periods. And that's because there is a walkable catchment and there are people that are walking to this cafe. Granted, there might be people walking from the shopping centre to the cafe, but those people might be shopping at the IGA, going to the cafe to grab a coffee and then going back into the shopping centre to do further shopping or do their shopping at the IGA. You cannot expect customers of the IGA to park at the Little H, then go back and park at the IGA. But by all means, this application from day dot, we did not rely on the parking bays at the shopping centre. We did not use the parking bays at the shopping centre as justification for the increase in patronage at Little H Cafe. And that needs to be registered by Hawaiian and obviously considered by the councillors. We do not rely on the shopping centre car park. If people tend to use them, that's out of our control. Comello, as he's pointed out, has educated his customers not to do that. And you don't get many businesses out there which will actually address their customers. They tend not to have that interaction with them. So to conclude, Comello has done a fair bit since August 2023 to try and limit the impact in which this cafe may have on local residents and certainly parking within the area. So we hope that council at its meeting in 2 weeks' time can see merit in the 60 seats only on the Friday, Saturday and Sunday. The rest of the week can be at a lower
rate. Thank you, Mr. Famiano.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions?
No, sorry, ran out of time for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. No problem. Thank you.
For our next deputation is Jacqueline Hope.
Good evening, Mayor Jacob and councillors. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to this issue again. promoting drag queen story time in public libraries, a picture is worth a thousand words. Unfortunately, I received your email stating that slides showing 3 and 4 would have to be removed because they had photographs of children. I went to great trouble to find images that were in the public domain, and it actually says Getty Images right across the picture, and the children's faces cannot be seen or identified. And if we can go to the first slide that isn't showing the picture, this slide is saying, what does drag stand for? Drag queen, a folk etymology in the drag, is the acronym of dressed resembling a girl. A description of the male theatrical transvestism, drag as a term referring to a woman's clothing worn by a man, has less clear origins. So the next screen, next slide please. Okay, so the next slide said it had the picture of a grotesque person, male, dressed in female clothing with exaggerated makeup on, and the wording said, scary looking woman. A scary travesty of womanhood. Is this a positive female role model? The next picture, which wasn't allowed, again, with the adult male's face seen, but nothing of the child. It says, why? Reading, because the child is actually draped over this man that is lying on the floor. And it says, reading or inappropriate behavior with an unable to consent to a child. The WHO document, Sexual Activity in Europe, chapter 28, and says children aged 10 to 15. From the age of 10, children become more interested in adult sexuality. The next picture, the next slide, which is not being allowed to be shown, was objected to because it was felt that I was making slights against the city of Joondalup. It actually says Cougar Morrison reading at City Library in Perth. Toned down man dressed in a woman's clothing promoting this as normal behaviour for men.
I just want to correct a statement that you made. That one was ruled out of order because it clearly identifies child and a mother, neither of whom we know have given permission for their...
This was taken at the City Library, so I presume
the
city has allowed it. It's her promotional advertising.
Thank you, but I don't know. It wasn't for the reason that you stated. It was that we have no way of knowing whether they have given permission for their image to be used. Please carry on with the deputation. The reason why.
So, the last slide is actually me, and I've lost a lot of weight since then, I'm grateful to say. It's showing that I am not prejudiced against drag queens as adult entertainment. This was a private cinema fundraising event showing Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, a film which children 0 to 5 would not be allowed to see, but they would be allowed to have this person reading to them in a public library. And what I now want to tell you is, it's not just the inappropriate look of these people, but the very fact that the material they're reading is not Three Blind Mice, It Feels Good to Be Yourself, a book about gender identity. Some people are boys, some people are girls, some people are both, neither, or somewhere in between. This sweet, straightforward exploration of gender identity will give children a fuller understanding of themselves and others, written by a transgender child and illustrated by a non-binary transgender artist. That's the sort of things you're asking. Is it okay? We're asking, are you happy with that? And for my final statement, as I said, if this council found it offensive to see these pictures, and we're adults, why is it okay for children to see these people? So the city of Joondalup states in its vision that it's a global city, it's bold, it's creative, and it's prosperous. Its values are transparency, accountable, honest, ethical, respectful, sustainable, professional. I'm struggling to equate those principles to the early sexualization of vulnerable children's minds. And hopefully, as elected public servants, this council of COJ will heed, respect, and act on these concerns and not just blindly go along with the dictates of this insidious, evil global agenda? Or is the reality that local councils, not specifically this one, have no powers to make autonomous decisions and just carry out the commands handed down to them, which should make attendance at these meetings superfluous? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hope. Next deputation is from Ms. Nikki Danger.
Good evening, Mayor. Good evening, councillors. I've got a deputation about the issue of no Wi-Fi in the schools. I prepared a PowerPoint, but we probably won't be able to play most of it because we're limited to 5 minutes, it seems. So if you'll bear with me, I'm going to just jump through it. I am no expert on Wi-Fi. I, in actual fact, just enjoy it like everybody else does, to be able to catch up with friends and things. But it's over the last 24 hours, not only did I go more grey, but I think I lost more hair. I had no idea the harm Wi-Fi is doing to our children. And I thought I might just help you to understand a little bit of the angst that's been behind some of the motions that people in the community have been raising to the community, which I might add have been backed up with global expertise, scientific knowledge about how dangerous Wi-Fi is. I used to be a midwife, and we used to do this horrendous thing, break the membranes of the baby, you know, to get the baby out, and we would put a fetal electrode on the baby's head. That baby had already been exposed to devices. And I'm sad to say that our children in the community, in our schools, are now exposed to the use of the frequencies and things that come from the Wi-Fi, actually morning, noon and night, and some children are being caught catching up with all sorts of social media overnight. So I cut and pasted a lot of my PowerPoint. If it's going to come up, or it is, please go to slide 1, 2, 4 and 5 and flash them quick. That was all about the history around this, I suppose it's a motion really. We would like actually, what are we asking? That the City of Joondalup just request a formal letter to be sent to Mark Butler, the Honourable Minister for Health and Ageing, as soon as possible to convey the community concerns which have already been very competently reported to the Council by many others far more experienced and knowledgeable about the issue than myself. And I'm giving you the conclusion before I get cut off at the end. So you're getting that bit now. So we would like that the government adopt a precautionary principle and support schools and kindergartens and install hard wiring of computers. Hard wiring is safer. Educate school staff about the risks of RFR, how to limit exposure to mobile phones, cordless iPads, laptops, smart boards, smart meters, in fact, all devices, because we're all now living with the Internet of Things and probably going to have the Internet of Bodies soon. So wherever Wi-Fi is unavoidable, have switches installed so that they can be switched off. Please provide materials to educate children about how to minimize their exposure. I would also add, let's educate everybody to go into their settings on their phones and actually read where the exposure risks are. Men should not walk around with the phones in their trouser pockets, please. Ladies should not wear their phones in their blouses. There are images they've got now because of high technology, and they can show the frequency, how it actually goes. Now, why are the children at risk? Because their skulls are thin and their bodies absorb the danger quicker. So that was the what are we asking? Number two is, why are we asking? We just can't wait. We can't adopt the wait-and-see approach. We need to act now. Why are we asking? The city has stated it has no role, and one can understand that because they are not actually ARPANSA. And if I was more knowledgeable, I could explain what that meant. But it has a responsibility, without a doubt, to communicate community concerns about health hazards, especially those being reported at high level. However, the officers can only just report the APRA's responses. Does the city know how poorly APRA is staffed? They have a CEO and three staff. That's quite a lot, you think? I don't. In WA, to manage nuclear threat as well as the Wi-Fi. While this technology has only actually been in use since 1999, and it's only since then, we're just starting to see the worrying effects of long-term... I should have moved your slide on to 14 and 15, sorry. Forget all that. That's really important if you get a chance to read it. On, is that number 14? Let's have number 15. Yes, this lady, she's actually a global speaker, but she was speaking in Melbourne, and it's worth reading what she has to say. Apparently France and Israel and Cyprus have already banned Wi-Fi in their schools and educational facilities, but we have not done anything at all to protect our children. I looked at the education department's policies. They protect the teachers well.
Thank you.
Not kids.
Thank you, Ms. Danger. Thank you.
Will you write to Mr. Butler?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Teresa Fairley.
Good evening, Mayor, councillors, ratepayers and interested citizens. Thank you for giving me time to present my deputation. I guess there'll be a few groans as the subject of glyphosate comes up again. Please show slide one. Number two, sorry. No, that's it. I'm referring to a recent motion asking the city to phase out the use of glyphosate. It's been addressed many times at council meetings for many years. However, as a concerned ratepayer, we want to see this poison gone forever. Motion 15 from the AGM on the 5th of March was moved by B. Hewitt, seconded by M. Kwok, that the electors of the city of Joondalup request that council instructs the city to prepare a comprehensive program this year to phase out the use of glyphosate and other pesticides within the city of Joondalup, making an incremental shift to non-chemical weeding methods such as hydrothermal, manual and mechanical weeding over the next 3 years. The motion was put and carried. A response to this motion has been answered on page 89 of the agenda for this evening. Please can I have the next slide. The officer's recommendation is as follows, that council in response to motion number 15 carried at the annual general meeting of electors. Number one notes that weed management activities across the city will continue to be undertaken in alignment with the adopted weed management plan 2023 to 2033. It's a 10-year plan. Number two does not support the motion requesting the city prepare a comprehensive program this year to phase out the use of glyphosate and other pesticides within the city of Joondalup to make an incremental shift to non-chemical weeding methods such as hydrothermal, manual and mechanical weeding over the next 3 years. Next slide, please. The weed management plan stated that the plan is based on the latest science research and relevant advice from state government and industry agents. The city received advice from the Department of Health, which states that glyphosate products are registered with APVMA, are safe when used in accordance with the label instructions. Furthermore, advice provided states that the glyphosate is not confirmed class 1 human carcinogen and is registered for use throughout the world, and current regulatory assessment is that it does not pose a risk to humans when used according to the label instructions. Next slide, please. A year before this draft weed management plan came out, this motion was recorded in relation to motion 10 of the AGM of electors in 2021, Mayor Jacobs moved a motion that the city phase out nasty chemicals on footpaths and road reservations by December 2025. This was documented at the council meeting held on the 18th of May 2021. Quote, 11.3 supports the city phasing out the use of glyphosate and other pre-emergent and residual chemicals deemed as confirmed carcinogens and otherwise detrimental to human health in public areas by 31st of December 2025, except for the use in the some sites and natural areas as above there. In reading this motion, it directly contradicts what was then said by the responsible director in infrastructure services on the 15th of November 22. It is noted that at the same meeting, Councillor Christopher May moved to revoke the motion of the 24 hours glyphosate caution signage. Next slide, please. After expert advice, the city has declared that glyphosate is not a confirmed class 1 carcinogen as per the draft weed management plan. However, litigation is going on around the world suing Bayer for cancer diseases. Bayer bought out Monsanto for over $60 billion, has recently agreed to pay up to $10.9 billion to tens of thousands of cancer claims. There are still over 54,000 active cases against Bayer. Next slide, please. May I bring to your attention the City of Stirling, who have committed to endorse a glyphosate reduction program, including reduction targets and timeframes, which reduce their glyphosate usage by at least 80% within 5 years. This was documented at their council meeting on the 27th of October 2020. Next slide, please. In the agenda of the ordinary meeting of the Council of the City of Stirling on the 17th of November 2020, there were graphs and plans of how they were going to implement and actively decrease the use of glyphosate across the city. They also outlined the financial implications of these changes in the program, reducing glyphosate usage to zero. They even listed two options, restaged increases, and option number one was adopted. The slide is option number one. Next slide, please. There are many diseases that have been linked to Roundup, including non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. A class action is taking place in Melbourne with many saying they're not non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is caused by Roundup. There are 800 people in the class action who've all been diagnosed with NHL. This was filed with the Federal Court of Australia on the 4th of September 2023. This product is banned in up to 33 countries around the world, in such countries like Vietnam, where there's a total ban, Belgium, Fiji, Saudi Arabia and Malta. Next slide, please. Other councils in New South Wales, Australia were also urging councils consider other weed killing options by the New South Wales insurance body state cover.
Thank you, Ms. Farley. Thank you. For our next deputation, Ms. Linda Crawford.
Good evening, Mayor, Councillors, Linda Crawford, Gurun Road, Duncraig. I would like to address the motion on fluoride. Only about 7 countries in the world mandate fluoridated tap water to more than 50% of their populations. In other words, only 5% of the population have politicians that force fluoride into the drinking water. I have been given permission from Fluoride Free Australia to freely use their information to look at the safety and effectiveness. I quote, I want to emphasise the fact, or slide please, I want to emphasise the fact that nowhere in Europe where fluoridation has been stopped has there been an increase of dental caries observed afterwards. Rudolf Zeigelbecker, Austria. Next slide, please. I quote, fluoridating public water supplies is now demonstrated to be ineffective at preventing dental caries, to be toxic for various body systems and damaging to the development of the central nervous system. James Beck, MD, PhD. Next slide, please. I quote, most Australians assume that fluoridation chemicals are pharmaceutical grade, especially produced to a quality suitable to add to our drinking water. Little do they know where our fluoride really comes from or what it might cost us and the environment. Next slide, please. It is a byproduct of the phosphate fertilizer industry. The toxic gases emitted as byproducts in these industrial processes are captured by a scrubbing process. fine jets of water are sprayed in the chimneys of the processing plants to capture these dangerous gases. The resulting chemical compound is hexafluorosilic acid. This liquid chemical, often contaminated with traces of other things such as lead, mercury, cadmium, chromium, and so on, is listed as a Schedule 6 poison. In Western Australia, the WA Water Corporation uses liquid hexafluorosilic acid for most fluoridated drinking water schemes in the state. Around 80% of this liquid is sourced directly from CSB phosphate processing plant in Kwinana, with a smaller amount imported from China and New Zealand, as you can see from a Google search from Healthy WA. Next slide, please. The evidence that fluoridation is more harmful than beneficial is now overwhelming. Dr. Hardy Lineback, Professor Emeritus and former head of the preventive dentistry at the University of Toronto. Next slide, please. More than 1,900 published peer-reviewed studies confirm fluoride's toxicity, and since the NHMRC's last review, more than 400 human and animal studies have reinforced that fluoridation chemicals are a neurotoxin, interfere with the endocrine system, damage the thyroid, disrupt enzymes, damage cell proteins, damage the kidneys, increase diabetes, damage the pineal gland, cause dental fluorosis and other systemic damage, damage our bones, may cause osteosarcoma, damage the reproductive system, cause allergies or hypersensitivity, and more. Next slide, please. Dr. Vivian Howard concludes that fluoride is a known neurotoxin. There is scientific evidence that human intelligence is being affected through the fluoridation of drinking water. On the basis of current knowledge, water fluoridation should be phased out on a precautionary basis. In the meantime, women considering becoming pregnant should avoid drinking fluoridated tap water or subsequently feeding babies with infant formula made up from fluoridated tap water. Next slide, please. The general public health duty imposes a legal duty on every person in WA to ensure that their actions, including any emissions, do not cause harm to the health of others. Next slide, please. The Public Health Act handbook also specifies the precautionary principle and the principle of proportionality. So when there is limited scientific evidence, it is better to err on the side of caution to protect public health. Next slide, please. I am here fulfilling my duty of care. It appears that some state government officials do not think this legal duty applies to them. In July 2022, a letter was sent to the state government detailing 30 questions of concern and requesting safety data and expressing concern that the MHRCA dismissed high-quality public research. Next slide, please. I haven't time to go through these, but I can confirm that they are still waiting for a response to their requests. Next slide, please. The city's response refers to the 2016 NHMRC review. According to Fluoride Free Australia, quote, the NHMRC's agenda and approach to fluoridation is so biased and so misleading, it's verging on fraud. Next slide, please. The NHMRC admits a complete lack of fluoride safety studies or trials. Next slide, please. I quote, as far as the 2016 and 2017 reports and the final 2017 public statement are concerned, there are 23 specific examples of NHMRC's unacceptable manipulations, omissions and obfuscations that should be identified. Many of these in isolation should disqualify the NHMRC's 2017 review from serious consideration, but in combination should question the very existence of this national health body. Whilst we understand that it is not a role of the council to regulate water fluoridation, I believe the city does have an obligation to inform the state of our concerns. We are stuck in the vicious cycle of being referred to a governing body that then ignores our concerns and requests whilst propagating the familiar mantra of safe and effective that we are all too familiar with. Whilst I appreciate that none of you are scientific experts on the matter and may not feel qualified to comment, I appeal to you, at the very least, pause before squashing this motion and at least take the time to look at some of the research and concerns I'm willing to provide.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford.
Thank you.
For our next deputation on item 12.9 as well, Ms. Michelle Kwok.
Michelle Kwok, 15 Crawford Ocean Reef. Mayor, councillors, good evening. This deputation is about an AGM motion asking for citywide Friends of PAW's group so that members may be covered under city's own public liability insurance. Next, please. Let's compare the two photos. The one on the left with the PAW public access way is planted out. It's beautiful, vibrant, and give you a sense of well-being. The one on the right looks sterile, hostile, and not being cared for, despite there's no weeds. It's also lacking in biodiversity. Planted out PAWs can act as wildlife corridors, forming precious ecological linkages. Flowering plants will attract pollinators, bees, butterflies, moths, birds, lizards, etc. It creates biodiversity and provides habitats. Birds' nests were sited in those dense shrubs. It also saved the use of toxic weed killers and helped to reduce urban heat island effect. Next, please. This was a slide extracted from draft climate change plan deputation last November. Bare sand was reading 35 degrees Celsius and the plant was reading 22 degrees Celsius. Plants are an important component in reducing urban heat island effect. PAW said running from east to west will have full sun exposure in summer, and there's more reason to plant them out. Next, please. This was an article by ABC Perth in 2020 encouraging planting along PAWs. That was in Kingsley. Councillor Chester was interviewed. Many residents are keen to follow the footsteps. Some of these plants might not be in alignment with the current guidelines. Nevertheless, it's kept neat and tidy and safe. Next, please. This is extracted from the city's weekly pesticide use site, showing PAWs in Padbury scheduled for weed control during that week. Just to demonstrate the number of PAWs in our suburbs and the potential of greening up the city. It's a practical way to a friends group looking after PAWs. They are passionate in beautifying the PAWs by providing valuable volunteer time without the use of poisons, making them much more cost-effective than using contractors for hydrothermal or manual weeding. Compared to chemical weeding, members of the friends group can carry out weeding when it's rainy or windy. Hand weeding is the ultimate way to reduce the seed bank, as we should all know by now that glyphosate does not kill seeds, and it's a never-ending story. Glyphosate is supposed to be the cheapest and the most effective way of weed control. I'm afraid it is not the case. Free volunteer time is the cheapest, and hand weeding, removing roots and seeds, is the most effective way to ensure that they won't recede down the track. This is also creating an avenue for people that wish to participate as environmental volunteers. Next, please. Currently, we have the PAW planting and maintenance program. Why do we only have two PAW registered for this initiative out of 980? To ask residents to obtain public liability insurance might have deterred a lot of people. City officers would like more information regarding intended structure and activities of the proposed Friend of PAW group, which we'll be addressing now. Next, please. This is a table extracted from the report showing us activities, group responsibilities, and city responsibilities. The green box on the top left is Natural Areas Friends Group. The yellow box at the bottom left is the PAW planting and maintenance process. Merging the two together, we make up a red box of the Friends of PAW on the right. We move public liability insurance from groups' responsibilities to cities' responsibilities. The activities remain the same, and Friends of PAW will be self-funded. Next, please. What would the structure look like? So, do we have a core group of many or many Friends of PAW groups? To save the city setting up multiple insurance policy, it would be easier to have one core group, and for people who wish to participate in planting and maintaining their PAW, they can just start a local group under the umbrella of the core group. Next, please. In terms of city's responsibility, provision of public liability insurance for age 12 to 80, friends groups, promotions or publications material may be required at the start to help establish the friends group. Local residents will apply through the city where their applications will be assessed for approval. It's a simple process. Last one, please. This is a PAW near me. This was planted up by someone a couple of houses away from the walkway, not myself. Residents in the street should be eligible to register with the Friends of PAW if they wish to take on the role to care for the PAW themselves. I hope the council will support and explore this fresh initiative. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kwok. I've got time for one brief question, perhaps. Thank you. Before our next deputation, I've received another declaration of interest from Councillor Fishwick for item 12.17, Community Funding Program Round 2. It's an interest that may affect partiality as Councillor Fishwick is a member of the Padbury Community Garden. And our next deputation is Ms. Suzanne Atz.
Suzanne Atz, 11 Pennant Place, Woodvale. Slide, please. I'm here tonight to seek further clarity for the community on the rezoning of Lot 36 and 28 Woodvale Drive. In a perfect world, the state would secure this piece of land as it's already part of the park. Half of Lot 36 is already bush forever. Yalagongo would then have an extended footprint, thus avoiding any of the compromising effects and the integrity of the park. Sadly, the community knows the state had no appetite for this. The community is also aware that this piece of land is an anomaly in the whole planning scheme, and so it does need to be rezoned to be consistent under planning policies. There's no getting around this. The community consultation saw 97.5% of the respondents object to the plans. There is a lack of clarity as to what R30 density means in reality for the community, what the unintended consequences are to the areas, whether Waterview Drive, with its narrow 6-metre road, is to become a through road to the church grounds, whether Woodvale Drive can manage any further increases in traffic, since it's already 25% over the desired volumes. And more widely, is this high coding now the accepted norm for any sites bordering or adjacent to our regional parks and bushland? What is missing is a structure plan. The vagaries of the concept plan leave more questions than answers for the community, which I hope the councillors agree with. Slide, please. Oh, you've already done it. Thank you. The report stated R30 is consistent for the area. I disagree. Here's the adjoining layout. Just over 50% of the site is zoned R20 and located closest to the park. Other higher lots are bordering Woodvale Drive. Even though coded higher, they have not been developed at the higher density, most likely because it didn't fit what the buyers were looking for. This is Woodvale. Slide, please. A blanket R30 coding would look like this. It doesn't work. It doesn't do what the applicant said, which is to provide a variety of housing designs. The rear of the site borders the bush. The wetlands are only metres away. Slide, please. There is no other piece of land like this that are coded higher than R20. You'll even see here R5 on the eastern side of Kingsley. And in Edgewater, whilst there is an R20-40 zone, this is 300 to 400 metres from the wetlands. Next slide, please. It is inconsistent to rezone at R30. There are no planning principles that would support a higher density, unless this is a green corridor. I don't think it is. On this site, R30 would generate 54 sites, so in practical terms, around 50 dwellings. In the concept plan, R30 is shown as only 38 sites, somewhat of a difference. On the concept plan, the dwelling sites would be 430 square metres, just marginally less than what the R20 provides. So why not zone R20? Next slide, please. Here's the concept plan. The layout demonstrates that a standard 50-metre wetland buffer cannot be met. You can clearly see the concerns from the residents that the road would extend to the rear of the church and provide an entry-exit point. The width of Waterview Drive is only 6 metres and is not designed to carry large volumes of through traffic. In this context, a 50-metre waterland buffer surely wouldn't be sufficient. You'll also see there are home sites that will have entries on and off Woodvale Drive, but there's nothing in the TIA as to how this would be managed or the impact. Slide, Pete. The TIA is of a concern. The data used to provide for all the modelling was taken from main roads. in the vicinity of the site. I believe the intersection of Wanneroo Road and Woodvale Drive is the site that was used. No actual data was taken from Woodvale Drive. The maximum desirable level for a local distributor road is 6,000, a whopping 25% overuse. This is not identified in the TIA. I obtained data from June 23. This clearly shows a very high level of traffic entering and exiting at Wanneroo Road. They are not school drop-off and pick-ups from Woodvale College, as the catchment doesn't go east of Wanneroo Road. This is clearly through traffic due to an increase in subdivisions in around Wanneroo, the overpass, and everyone who wants to avoid the ever-increasing traffic jam on Ocean Reef Road in Edgewater. As Moan Road stated, the route of a local distributor road should discourage through traffic. This is certainly not happening. Slide, please. The report says the development will have no impact. However, how can this be confirmed when the report isn't based on data for Woodvale Drive, is only based on 38 dwellings, not the maximum 54, and doesn't reflect housing on Woodvale Drive? A new TIA should be provided before approving anything. I'm aware that the administration advised they will be considering allocating funds in the 24-25 budget process for road treatments. However, there is nothing stated that this will reduce the overuse. The community have raised these concerns before, but I hope the City of Joondalup would address the overuse and reduce the volumes on this road as a priority well before any further development in the area are provided. Slide, please. In the recent weeks, we've seen 9 roo collisions on Woodvale Drive. Thankfully, no humans were injured, but all roos died, in the majority of cases, by gunshot, and not always in a timely, humane manner. In the DVC comments in the report, the removal of the kangaroo habitat will displace the roos into the adjoining regional park, with the fencing off of Duffy House and the ever-increased numbers of fenced-off areas for revegetation.
Thank you, Ms. Apps. For our final deputation, Mr. Chris Nolan.
Good evening, councillors. My name is Chris Nolan and I'm a director at Urbis, and tonight I'm talking to item 13.1.4 on the agenda, being an amendment to local planning scheme number 3, which is to rezone the western portion of lot 36 Woodvale Drive from rural to residential R30, and a small portion of lot 28 Woodvale Drive from private community purposes to residential R30. It's a bit of a mouthful. Tonight, on behalf of my client, Noble Hodge, I'm speaking in favour of the officer's recommendation to support the amendment with various conditions. From the outset, whilst I note there are a number of submissions against the proposal, it is an amendment that is entirely consistent with the underlying urban zone under the Metropolitan Region Scheme and the City's own local planning strategy, which identifies the site for residential purposes. In reality, this is a perfect, well-serviced and located residential infill site that will provide for an additional 35 to 40 homes, which in the current climate I see is a really positive thing. This aside, I note a number of concerns were raised by the community and obviously in the previous deputation in relation to vegetation on site, kangaroos, traffic and the density coding, and I'd like to respond to these. On vegetation on site, there are a number of significant trees on site and the value of these has been acknowledged by both our client and the various environmental agencies, DBCA and EPA centrally. The location of these trees is probably not ideal in the context of a regular subdivision pattern, but my client is committed to wherever possible retaining trees in POS or road reserves, and where this is not possible, undertaking revegetation elsewhere in the subdivision. On the topic of kangaroos, yes, kangaroos do currently graze on the western portion of Lot 36. As is outlined in the officer report, however, this land is privately owned and has been identified for future residential for some time. And this development, in fact, should keep the kangaroos away from Woodville Drive and in the Yellingonga regional open space where they're probably better located. We've also suggested to council that a specific kangaroo management plan, yes, that is very much a thing, could be imposed as a future condition of subdivision to ensure the most humane movement or relocation of the kangaroos if it is required. On local traffic concerns, the ultimate development will add approximately 300 to 350 vehicles per day to a local road network that should accommodate circa 3,000 vehicles per day. So while small increases are inevitable, the local roads are more than capable of accommodating them. As is also mentioned in the officer report, the city's engineers are comfortable that safe access and egress to Woodvale Drive is also achievable. And I understand there are more broadly works and funding and plans underway to consider traffic on Woodvale Drive, which I do understand to be a local rat run. Finally, on density, on the question of density and the compatibility of R30, the immediate adjacent subdivision is a combination of R20, R25 and R40. Across the other side of Yellingonga Reserve, there's the Chianti Estate, which is a mix of R25, R30, R40. R30 seems appropriate in the context of its proximity to regional open space and schools. And the intent is at R30 not to subdivide it out at its maximum density of an average of 300 square metres and minimum of 280. It is to allow for a little bit more flexibility. It's not a big site. There's no point in allocating small amounts of upper or lower density. That's all I really wanted to touch on tonight. We're very much supportive of the resolution before you and the conditions that have been added, particularly the environmental conditions around tree retention and the like. I've been speaking to my client quite a bit about that to ensure that there is a good outcome there. There is some good vegetation there that can be retained, and we look forward to working with council through future phases of planning as this project progresses. That's all I was going to mention. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Nolan. Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. If I could just ask, Mr. Nolan, with regard to his comments on the handout that I've got in front of me, however, request to remove some modification proposed regarding additional requirements for tree planting retention. I did move a motion requesting the proponent to hand over to the state government and becoming part of the regional park one third of the southern portion of the development. So could you just tell me what that statement
in the original request that related to the conditions that were added primarily around subdivision requirements, water management, fauna management and the like, which are typical subdivision conditions, the person working with me on this project suggested that, you know, it could just be left to subdivision, which is true, to be honest, I'm quite comfortable having them inserted into the town planning scheme to give everyone absolute certainty. 100% comfortable with that. So no changes to the resolution as put forward.
Time's running short. I'll go to the ward councillor, Councillor Chester, Councillor Pizzi.
The environmental assessment report was carried out by PGV Environmental. They stated that it did a reconnaissance of flora and fauna in the area in November 18, 2022. They noted no existence of black carnivore cockatoos. I live in the area and I see them all the time. How long was this survey conducted over for, and what time of the day?
Could not answer that question. I don't have PGV here. I do note that they noted that there was potentially foraging habitat there. They didn't notice the species on site, but they did notice some hollows in trees, and hence why this proposal has been referred to the EPBC in that context, which is the federal group, which, again, has to be closed out before we actually get to any subdivision and development. So they didn't note any cockatoos.
Thank you, Mr. Nolan.
But noted that potentially there is foraging habitat.
We're out of time, but if there's an opportunity for councillors to email questions to any of the deputies, persons who gave deputations, please do so. Thank you, Mr. Nolan.
Thank you.
That concludes our deputations. We now proceed to public question time. There's a set of procedures which relates to public question time, and I'll ask that you follow my direction at all times. You'll have an opportunity to ask up to two questions, and your questions must be through the chair and also asked in a polite, respectful manner. Furthermore, questions asked at a briefing session must relate to an item listed on the briefing session agenda. And as per our meeting procedures local law, I would ask that you please state your name and address for the public record before asking your question. As is our practice, we maintain a register, and I will commence there and call forward first Mr. Don Poynton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and councillors. Don Poynton, 32, Princetal Tor, Connolly. I'm here representing the Joondalup Community Coast Care Forum. And my first question, and in fact both questions, I appreciate may need to be taken on notice, Mr. Mayor. Question relating to item 12.12. What was the total cost of conducting surveys and compiling the draft Iluka Burns Beach Foreshore Reserve Management Plan, including the community consultation?
Director Parry. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Mr. Poynton, for the question and for all of your comments regarding the plan as well. On page 167 of the agenda are the costs or relation to the operating budget. In relation to those surveys which you've made a question about, I will need to take that on notice and get back to you.
Thank you, through the Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Poynton. Second question?
Second question relates to item 12.9, motion 13. What was the total cost of conducting and reporting on the Sorrento foreshore flora survey and vegetation condition assessment and the Ocean Reef foreshore reserve flora survey and vegetation condition assessment reports conducted last year? Again, I believe that probably needs to be taken on notice.
Did I get that correctly? What item were you asking that with regards to, Mr. Poynton?
To the motion 13 of the of item 12.9.
No worries, I went to motion 9, hence. Thank you. For that one, I'll go Director Parry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and yes, I'll definitely need to take that one. I just don't have that information with me. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Mr. Poynton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Mitch Sedaris. Are there any other questions? Ms. Kwok?
Michelle Kwok, 15 Crevel Ocean Reef. Question relating to item 12.4. What is the cost to produce the report on the item, please?
Director Lee?
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. I'd need to take the question on notice to provide you a specific dollar figure. It would consist of officer time. We didn't require any external support or any particular materials to produce the report, so it would just be a cost equivalent to the officer time spent on it.
Thank you. Are there any other public questions? If not, I declare public question time closed and we proceed to public statement time. There's a set of procedures which relates to public statement time, and I request that you follow my direction at all times. You're able to make a statement for up to 2 minutes. Statement should be directed through the chair and made in a polite and respectful manner. No question or discussion occur at the end of your statement, and statements made at a briefing session must relate to an item listed on the briefing session agenda. Again, as per our meeting procedures local law, I'd ask that people would please state their name and address for the public record before making a statement. And finally, as per briefing session rules, number 8, I think, persons who participated in a deputation are not permitted to make a statement as well at the same briefing session. As with question time, we've maintained a register, and so I'll commence there and call forward for our first statement, Mr. Brian Saunders.
Thank you, Mayor Jacob, elected members of council, representatives of the city. My name is Brian Saunders and my residence is at 2 Withers Grove, Woodvale in the city of Joondalup. I speak tonight on behalf of the four current SAR areas, all of whom are represented here this evening. We would like to acknowledge and thank the officers of the city for their recommendation in relation to motion number 32 carried at the annual general meeting of electors, which they do not support. We look forward to the opportunity of presenting our position to the CEO during the current consultation period and review of the city's SAR policy, in highlighting the contribution that the four SAR areas are already bringing to the city, which far outweigh any suggested administration cost as per the briefing session agenda on page 124. We would appreciate if the elected members support the officer's recommendation to allow proper consultation and consideration to then take place. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Saunders. For our next statement, Mrs. Faye Gilbert.
Good evening. Faye Gilbert, 29 Northwood Way in Calgary. My statement relates to the local planning strategy and the local housing strategy review, item 13.1.3. As chair of the Calgary Residents Association, and after being involved in housing opportunity areas for several years, I can say that we're so very glad to see this review is progressing. We should like to thank the Director of Planning and Community Development for his leadership in working on this complex piece of work and ensuring that it can be successful for the whole city by following all the relevant state planning policies and, importantly, by obtaining backing from the community with extensive, meaningful community consultation followed by action. We cannot impress enough on both the council and the officers that this review needs to be done sooner rather than later. It should be noted that rather than this review being brought forward, as first mentioned, the local housing strategy has now become due for its statutory review required under legislation. We look forward to a strategic approach which will provide the development needed by our community, the opportunity to be delivered in the right way, and a way that we can all live with. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Gilbert. Mr. Peter Mellows. Ms. Beth Hewitt.
Thank you. Beth Hewitt for Woodview Court, Edgewater. Well, it's a jam-packed agenda tonight, but there are two key issues I'd like to say something on. The local planning scheme phase three proposal. And it's great to see all the hard work of the Director of Planning and his team coming through after all these years of the community patiently waiting. Please make sure that any changes are backed by the state planning policies and are evidence-based. It's heartening to see that this is still a whole-of-city review and that selected pockets are not being kept in or out of any potential solution. The community will be anxious to participate in the consultations. And my second point is on the Boaz redevelopment. I think it misses the mark. If I'm reading the plans correctly, you seem to be putting two dinky little civic areas in. And you're cramming it full of potential office, retail and residential space. But a global city is usually known by landmarks created as, such as public spaces. They function in their true civic role. They can be the settings where celebrations are held, social and economic exchanges take place, where friends run into each other and where cultures mix. They are the front porches of our public institutions, post offices, courthouses, council buildings, where we can interact with each other and with the government. When cities have thriving civic spaces, residents have a strong sense of community. Conversely, when spaces are lacking, people feel disconnected from each other. Think of Times Square, Trafalgar Square, Martin Place. You know the cities that go with them. The two dinky little spots allocated are just not sufficient in my view, and the city is missing the opportunity to create a larger piazza or plaza that can be used on any number of community events, festivals, gatherings, as well as the potential for alfresco dining from adjacent restaurants.
Thank you, Ms. Hewitt. Thank you. Does anybody else wish to make a statement? If not, I declare public statement time closed. I have a further declaration of interest from myself for item 12.9, minutes of the annual general meeting. It's an interest that may affect impartiality as I own and reside in a property within a specified area right, area in the city. Next item of business is apologies and leaves of absence. I don't have any apologies for tonight's meeting. We have a full house. Are there any elected members requesting a leave of absence? Councillor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The 2nd to the 18th of June inclusive, please.
Thank you. Any other requests? Any requests listed on tonight will be up for approval at the council meeting on
Tuesday, the 28th of May. Next item being confirmation of minutes, which we also deal with at the ordinary council meeting, as is announcements by the presiding member without discussion. Identification of matters for which the meeting may be closed to the public. There are no confidential items tonight. However, the tender for Percy Doyle Football T-Ball Club Room does have confidential attachments, and councillors, if there's any questions on those confidential attachments, please flag and I'll need to move it to the back and put us behind closed doors. Next item is petitions. The city's received two petitions as follows. First being a petition in relation to the dangerous commute faced by the children of Poynter Primary School, and the second being a petition in relation to removing the development approval condition for the retention of a tuart tree for Corinthian Court Stage 3 development to enable the tree to be removed due to health and safety issues being experienced by residents of the retirement village. Are there any other additional petitions, elected members? If not, submitted petitions will be received, checked for validity, and if valid, presented to the council meeting held on the 28th of May, 24. Now move to the reports section of the agenda, and I will work my way through. First being item 12.1, development and subdivision applications, March 2024. Any questions on this item? Item 12.2, Mary Road, Duncraig, Section 31, reconsideration under the State Administrative Tribunal Act, Little H Cafe, Councillor Fishbeck.
Thank you, Mr Mayor. To assist with the turnover of on-street parking bays, being the two bays in Casino Road, which was financed by the then owner of Little H in relation to the parking shortfall, and now the proposed three bays on the southern side of Murray Road, can the city implement time-restricted parking, say at 2 hours, between appropriate operating hours of the local businesses, which would assist in the turnover of those bays?
Director Lee.
Thank you through you, Mr Mayor. Yes, if Council are supportive of the proposal to include some additional bays in Murray Road, we would look to make them, we would manage them in some way. I think it would be most likely we would do it through time restrictions. We do want to ensure that they are turned over and serve the function of being available for patrons in and around the activity centre. If we were not to, I'd have some concerns that they may be taken up in perpetuity by someone and not really achieve their intent. I wouldn't necessarily think we would link it to a condition of planning approval, but it's certainly something that we could consider in how we manage them if they are constructed.
Councillor Fisher, just to follow up, if we implement time-restricted parking bays, then is policing able to be carried out adequately by our staff?
Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr Mayor. It depends on the degree to which you restrict them from a timing point of view, and that's something that we'd be taking into consideration in terms of arriving at an appropriate time. If you were to have them as 5 or 10 minute bays, for example, that would be something that would be more challenging to police, as there'd need to be a staff member down there quite frequently. If it was to be a longer term, like a 2 hour turnover, as you suggested, that's something that's more readily able to be built into our normal scheduling and patrolling of time restricted areas.
Further questions? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr Mayor. Just in relation to the time-restricting bays as well, would it be possible for the city to provide a cost implication on a range of different time implementations should the council choose to adopt timed parking, so we know what we're walking into in terms of costs?
Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr Mayor. We can endeavour to provide some guidance. I think it's fair to say that we would manage this time restriction amongst the other duties that our field officers perform. So it may not be a case that we are visiting the site every 2 hours, for example, but we would build it into a scheduling so we would be able to provide an appropriate monitoring and enforcement of those bays, but I'll see what I can prepare in terms of cost implications for you.
Further questions? Councillor O'Neill?
Thank you. Just one more. Could the city also provide any information if we have existing time parking that is monitored that would help us to understand better how those time parking areas function?
Director?
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. Yes, in providing those anticipated cost implications, we can also provide a summary of how we go about managing our time-restricted areas as well.
Further questions? Councillor Ventura.
Thank you, through you. Just a quick question. The up near Maori and obviously on Roche Road, if you come into both, there's, I guess you could say, a little bit of leftover land. I don't know if it's council land or what is the actual, but if you see it obviously on the maps, you can see there's, is there opportunity basically for some further council parking to be developed? And is there an opportunity here too for paid parking?
Director?
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. If I may just clarify, Councillor Ventura, in terms of the additional leftover land on Roche Road, is it the extent of Roche Road adjacent to the shopping centre that you're looking at?
And so primarily on the entry point coming in on the back end and towards Evolve. So it's only a little bit on the Roche side, but I'm more referring to Maori Road side, to be honest. There's that big pocket there on the top. And I'm not too sure what the condition is on it, but I'm just floating it as a potential suggestion.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. We have explored options along Maori Road and Roche Road separate to this particular application as well. And I think it's fair to say we've maximised what we believe can be constructed safely, taking into account the various sightline and traffic engineering requirements. So that does include utilising a portion of the Maori Road Reserve that's grassed at the moment and using that for three bays. We've looked at Roche Road and the environment there isn't conducive to providing any more bays, unfortunately, in terms of we've got a road carriageway and a footpath and then the property boundary. There's just not enough space there to include parking bays as well.
Further questions? Councillor May.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a question. I notice if I go out somewhere in the western suburbs or Mount Rorley or around there, there's people park on the residential streets on the actual road, and it doesn't seem to be an issue. I'm just wondering, given the more inner suburbs tend to have more straight line roads, what's the criteria for whether the city would allow people to park on the street versus not parking on the street?
Director?
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. So people are able to park on the road in general terms. It is something that you are allowed to do, but you're quite correct. In a lot of our suburbs, the road network is, I guess, more curvilinear in nature, less grid-like, and therefore that comes with bends that don't allow as good a sight line as you would get in somewhere like a Mount Lawley or the like, where it is a very gridded sort of road network. And so whilst people may be able to park on the road generally, they may not feel comfortable to do so. And that's typically what we see in and around our suburbs. People are more comfortable either in a parking bay on a private bit of land or in a constructed bay in the verge, but actually off the road itself.
Thank you. Further questions? Councillor Kingston?
Yes, thank you. My first one is for page 25 of the agenda. There's a summary of the car parking requirements. And as far as Friday and Saturday for the educational establishment, it says here that they do not open during the opening hours of the cafe. But looking on the website of the educational establishment, they do operate during the hours of the cafe. So is that exceeding their development approval, or is that approved and they're able to operate at that time because no allowances for parking bays have been made for SATO?
Director?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I'm aware that their website does advertise trading hours on the weekend. Their planning approval does limit their operating hours and it doesn't allow for them to operate on the weekends. That is a separate conversation we are having with that that tenant, so they're aware of what they have approval for.
Councillor?
Yep, a further question on page 29. So the 120,000, could I get a breakdown of what that actually is? So 53,000 is the on-street parking bays, and it seems to be there's 70,000 in there for a footpath for about 70 metres, that's 70, 80 metres, that seems to be quite an expensive footpath. So is there other costs in there?
Director Klassen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The project that's listed in the current financial here is for Duncraig Primary School crossing improvements. The value of that project, which includes a number of crossing points, construction of linking footpaths, etc., is all included in that project. So it's not just a single footpath and a single crossing to provide that. We currently have delayed the construction or the commencement of construction pending the outcome of council decision on the parking base, so which will require a slight modification of our design for the footpath in that specific area, and then inclusion of the car base in the project itself.
Okay. Councillor Kingston?
Yes, following on that, it's just on page 29, it says that the scope of the works, I presume that's the scope of the works for this agenda item, including the installation of the footpath and the on-street bays, totals 120,000. So it seems to be, is there other costs and elements regarding, rather than just the actual footpath itself, who is paying for the cost of moving the services, given there's a significant number of services where these bays are located?
Director Lee? Paul Klassen?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If there are service relocations that's caused by the construction of the car base, that will be taken into consideration of the cost of the car base, yes.
Further questions? Deputy Mayor, then Councillor Jones. Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thank you. Firstly, just with regard to declaration of interest, I think I heard you make a declaration of interest for the item on specified area rates. I do recall that when we had the policy committee meeting in February that I made an inquiry with administration and was told that it wasn't necessary. However, for the purpose of the exercise, I'm happy to replicate your declaration, which I believe was in part impartiality rather than financial.
Correct, yes.
As I do also reside in the SAR area. Moving on to the item before us and questions, I would like to get a bit of an understanding of the actual commercial arrangements for the Double H Cafe, if that's possible. I appreciate some of these questions might need to be taken on notice. Could I ask whether the operator of Little H actually owns the commercial space or whether they have a rental arrangement? Thank you.
Director Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will take the question on notice and confirm, but my understanding is that they lease the space. There is a separate landowner for the property, if you like, and then they occupy the space. But I will take that question on notice and clarify with them the arrangements.
Yes, thank you. My interest is primarily related to the responsibility for the additional parking spaces. And with that in mind, could I ask to also find out what the current duration of that tenancy is?
Director Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I'll take that question on notice and see if I can confirm that. But if I may just add to my response to that, the intent is for the construction of bays to form a condition of planning approval. Planning approval runs with the land. So in the event that the current operators move or change hands, then there'll still be an obligation on the landowner and the new operator to fulfil those planning requirements if they want to trade at that that capacity of 54 customers.
Thank you. And continuing,
was the owner of the commercial property any party to the SAT mediation process? Thank you.
Director.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. My understanding is they didn't attend any of the sessions, but we can clarify with the applicant as to whether or not they were providing updates and keeping them abreast of the situation throughout the process as well.
Yes, thank you. I'm just trying to find information just so I can get a better understanding of the arrangement. Moving on, I did visit the site recently. My understanding is that in the shopping centre there is a coffee shop which is located on the entrance to the shopping centre that is closest to Little H. If I can confirm that, and also how long that coffee shop has been in operation, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Director?
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I understand there is a coffee shop or cafe at one of the entrances to the shopping centre. I know it is fairly recently opened, this one. There was a previous cafe in there as well, as I recall, but I will confirm when our records demonstrate that they opened and started trading for this particular operator.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Councillor Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Question for the Planning Director. Could you tell me when Rocky Ridge Brewery is due to open there, and has the City of Juna kind of considered how that's going to affect the parking demand?
Director.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. I'm unsure when Rocky Ridge is due to open. That's something that we can seek an update from the landowner from, to see if they're able to provide us any information. In relation to parking, I can advise that as part of the planning assessment that approved the land use to allow Rocky Ridge to occupy one of the existing buildings there, parking was taken into account against the planning policy that's in place that guides parking. And so I think, yeah, the long story short is parking was taken into account. It was assessed against the policy, and the application was supported because it was able to satisfy its parking requirements, amongst other things.
Further questions? 12.3, consulting rooms, 34 Seacrest Drive, Sorrento. Any questions on this item? 12.4, notice of motion, Library Cats. Any questions on this item? 12.5, execution of documents. Any questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Yes, could I get more information about... I've lost it on the screen. Hang on. Yes, could I get more information on the deed of variation and extension of lease for the three tenancies there? So it's the Greenwood Tennis Club, the Sorrento Tennis Club, and the Sorrento Surf Life Club. And in particular, could I understand how long the extension of lease for the Surf Life Club is, considering that the building is to be replaced? And what exactly is intended to be varied in the lease?
Mr. CEO? Director Clausen?
Through Mr. Mayor, I will have to take that question on notice in terms of the duration and length of the extension and provide that in the back.
Councillor Kingston?
And just further the same for Warwick Bowling Club as well.
Director?
Yes, I have to take that on notice as well for you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
And
Councillor?
Yeah, no, that's all right. I'll wait for the answer.
Further questions? Item 12.6, which we have a presentation on, Mr. CEO.
Thank you, Mayor, and with your permission, I'd like to invite Luke Wilcock, our Manager of Economic Development and Advocacy, to make a brief presentation on the item.
Thank you, and thank you, Mayor, for the opportunity to brief you on this paper, and there are just some key points that I think are worth covering. As we know, the City of Joondalup has many private e-rideables in our community, and apart from the state government rules, private e-rideables are largely unregulated. These private e-rideables can go anywhere and often faster than regulations allow, as I'm sure we know. So the private e-rideables are in the complete control of the user. The paper tonight is about hireable e-rideables, which are
somewhat in the control of the operator, and are used with and only be used within the boundaries set by the operator. So if it's recommended that this is, if the recommendation tonight's accepted, the city wouldn't be the first to adopt the hire of e-rideables in our community. And this has enabled e-rideable operators to address many of the early issues and find solutions that maintain the community amenity while providing an effective service to the community. Many Perth councils indeed have undergone trials for e-rideables through an e-rideable shared scheme and engaging a third-party operator. Hireable e-rideables are much more regulated now due to controls enforced by the operator through technology, which includes things like geofencing, speed inhibitors, specific areas that are rated as go-slow or no-go areas, as well as charging the users to encourage them to return the e-rideables to designated parking zones to avoid being additionally charged. So much has been learned from these trials, such as the low level of incidents and high level of safety for the rider and the community. Parking locations for e-rideables can be better controlled, and even though a number of LGAs do not stipulate parking areas for their scooters, the city is proposing, would propose parking areas, parking zones to identify where e-rideables can be parked. Also, the importance of flexibility in the oversight of the operator so that the areas can be quickly created as no-go or go-slow areas should problems arise. And it's interesting that an operator of e-rideables does not technically require the city's permission to operate. They really just need a place to park. So to give you an idea, e-rideable operators could operate from service station to service station, and there's not a role for the city to actually play. Importantly, though, we've seen from other local government areas that the operators are actually keen to work with local governments and to have a more effective operating model that's integrated well into the community and is better able to address the community's concerns and feedback in partnership with the local government. On local jobs and storage and maintenance, while it's not expected to be a need for large physical site for storage and maintenance, the e-rideable operator will be required to employ locally to maintain their fleet on a continuous basis and will be requested to look at local storage. The city will include all the non-compliance conditions in relation to these items in the report in our agreement with an e-rideable shared service provider to ensure the service standards are met. The city will tightly control and manage the operating conditions through that agreement with the operator. And a report would come back to council at the conclusion of the trial with the recommendations as to the options for continuation of the e-rideables on an ongoing basis. The direction proposed is recommended as e-rideable shared schemes provide amenity for our community, they provide support for our businesses, and if we are to have e-rideables in our community, which we already do have, it is recommended to have a professional organisation to work with us to provide this transport option. Thank you.
Thank you. Council questions? Councillor May.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just note on page, just let me go back to that page. Sorry, bear with me. Page 63 under the social heading, there's mention of an increase in residents living in smaller residences such as townhouses, units and apartments, several new apartment buildings planned, providing residents with car-free transport will increase the appeal of residing in the city of Joondalup. With that quote in mind, can I ask why the CBD wasn't considered?
Ms. Walker?
Thank you, and through the mayor. The initial thinking was based around probably two areas. One, to create a continuous route for riders going from Scarborough and the destination Perth all the way up the coast, which was set through the Sunset Coast Explorer bus back in the summer and spring of 21-22. That was seen as quite a success, and what we wanted to do was try and replicate that. It was seen as being the most popular option. So in discussions with e-share providers, we asked them about what the areas they would look at, and that their opinion was very similar. I think it's important you probably wouldn't have them continuously going along that area and join the CBD, because that's a long ride on a scooter. And so we didn't want to trial in two areas. So I guess through the mayor, a choice had to be made.
Thank you. Further question. Is the city taken into consideration and aware of the congestion along the principal shared path of along the coast of, for example, the park run from Whitbridge Nodes and other people who actually use the paths to physically exercise. And
Mr. Wilcock?
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah, on page 62, it does talk about and give some precise numbers about the numbers of people who are using that shared path, which at the moment I think is saying only about 2.8% of them are scooters, not just e-scooters but all scooters. You'd expect that number to go up. But I think what's really important, which is identified also in the report, that the rideshare provider can show a continuous number, a very, very consistent information about how many trips are going up and down particular shared paths. So we'll definitely get anecdotal feedback about the impact we're having, but we'll also have some precise feedback as well. We monitor pedestrian scooters, bikes at the moment, and the provider will be expected to monitor that as well. And as indicated also in the report, it is expected the administration be given the opportunity. If there are problem areas, we then designate that as a go slow area, or if it's really significant problem areas, it can be designated as a no go area.
Thank you. Further question. As someone who runs long runs along the coast, once you go south of Beach Road, you're actually dodging scooters left and right in the middle of the path, all over the place. How will the city see to not allow that to happen in our area, which many people prefer exercising along because they don't have to dodge scooters left in the middle of the path?
Ms. Walcott?
Thank you. Just for clarity, you're talking about the scooters that are parked or the scooters that are...
The scooters that are parked, but parked in the middle of a footpath when people are trying to walk or run along there.
Ms. Walcott?
Yes, thank you. Through the Mayor, that's why I did highlight that the parking areas for these scooters is definitely probably one of the issues that we hear the most about. We hear that from our neighbouring councils, and it is something that we are concerned about. When we go out for the EOI, we will be asking them, a clear stipulation will be around what is their approach to ensuring that the scooters are parked in the appropriate designated zones, and we will work with the infrastructure team to ensure there is space provided for those scooters to be parked.
Thank you. And final question. The section of coastal shared path north of Whitford Nodes Park and south of Mullaloo Beach is very narrow, hasn't been upgraded. Given the proposal is to add a lot of e-scooters on the congested path with a lot of running clubs using, etc., would a city consider actually upgrading that section of path at some point? Director Glasson.
Through Mr. Mayor, currently through the state government election commitment, there is a project to upgrade the coastal shared path between Hillary's and Birds Beach to a 4-metre wide path or 0.5 metre shoulders. We will commence with this first section imminently, the area that no clearing permits are required, and we're going through the clearing permit requirements for the other areas. So yes, there's already a project in place for that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Pizzi.
I just have a question to the wording of point two that approves the city to appoint a preferred ESS operator at the conclusion of the EOIS process. Does that mean that once the trial period has finished that it won't come back to council to make the final decision to approve it to continue?
Mr. Walker?
Thank you. Through the Mayor, no, it is intended the recommendation one is to only appoint the operator for a 12-month trial, so the council resolution is for this to run for 12 months only. We would need to come back to council to extend that beyond 12 months or for any other variation around that.
Councillor Ventura.
Thank you. Through you. Just a couple of quick questions. The first one is, are there any projected revenue outcomes on this? And in addition to that, outside of potential revenue opportunities for the city, is it also the possibility of creating local jobs out of this outcome? I'm just interested to see what the return on investment may be moving forward.
Mr. Walcott?
Thank you, and through the Mayor. For the trial period, there are no expected revenue. When you put a trial in place, we will probably be putting high restrictions on the operator, so it will come at somewhat of a cost to them to be able to make sure they're very responsive. So we're not proposing any revenue. Beyond the 12 months, should we appoint an operator for greater than, and the revenue, the operator would be taking a bit of risk of only coming into 12 months. Should we extend beyond, like our neighbouring council has gone for a permanent operator for 2 years with options, they are likely to see some revenue from that. We are not proposing revenue in a trial period. That is consistent with virtually every other council we've spoken to for a trial period. That it is revenue neutral. In terms of employment, that is identified in the report that we will be asking in the EOI for the operator to employ locally for the people who pick them up and change the batteries over and the like.
Councillor?
You mentioned that you had some conversations with other local councils. Based on that, obviously they've gone through a trial period and then it's obviously led to an outcome where they've actually engaged with a provider. Have you got any idea of the projected revenue outcomes that they've had since establishing it?
Mr. Wilcott?
Thank you, Chair. No, I wouldn't like to talk about the revenue projections from another local government. They haven't given us indications. That was part of the tender they ran, so that was a confidential part of their council reports.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston?
Thank you. It's actually a similar line of questioning. When we put out the EOI, can we include a section about a cost per square metre per e-scooter? Because, of course, for each e-scooter that will be left in a public area, it will take up a certain amount of public open space. And so if a person was to come in and have a coffee van, even if it was their first year of operation, we'd be charging them a permit fee. But with this, it seems to be that they're not being charged anything. So if it's part of the EOI, can we have them suggest the price? Is that possible?
Mr. Wilcock?
Thank you, and through the Mayor. We would need to work through that, and I'd probably need to come back to you on that one, I think.
Councillor Kingston?
Further on this, I mean, the report speaks of this being a trial, but is this really right to call it a trial? It has all the same characteristics of a one-year contract with the same sort of... when you engage a new contract with a new company, engaging a new business in there's always teething problems at the start. Is it really right to call this a trial? This, to me, looks like a one-year contract where they're not paying us anything.
I don't think that's a valid question, Councillor Kingston. Do you have another question? One person, one year, that's a matter of perspective. I'm not going to take that to...
Do we do this with any other contract?
Councillor Kingston, do you have another question?
We'll move on. As far as point two, and going to Councillor Pizzi's point, which is approach the city to appoint a preferred ESS. So will the expressions that come back from the EOI be returned to council, or is this being intended that point two will be the CEO will approve one of the expressions of interest for 1 year?
Mr. Wilcott?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, that's the intention. The administration would appoint their preferred ESS operator at the conclusion of the EOI process.
Councillor?
Thank you. And as far as the report from the first 12 months of this, is that there's a number of metrics that are, that are on page 64. Could we obtain a copy of the City of Stirling report, if that's possible, or the relevant sections of the agenda where they might have disclosed sections of that report?
Mr. Wilcock?
Yes, thank you, Truth Mayor. Yes, we will. We have copies of that, and we can ensure that in your packs is included the public versions of the City of Stirling's process.
Thank you. Councillor?
Thank you. And moving on to another point, in the agenda text at one location it talks about having a seamless trip from Scarborough up to Mullaloo, which would be the end point of this trial. But at the boundary between the City of Joondalup and the City of Stirling, if it is not the same operator, somebody would need to change scooters, almost like changing trains. So for an EOI, are we intending, if that's being considered strongly in the agenda here, when we go to an expressions of interest, will we just end up with the same operator that the City of Stirling has? And what sort of weight are we giving to that continuous trip between Scarborough and Mullaloo, given that if it's the same operator, you're not changing scooters, but if it is, if it isn't, then you are?
Mr. Wilcott?
Thank you, and through the Mayor. A very important question. I think if there was a large amount of parking in that area, you would probably give it a very, very low rating. It is actually quite a tight area. It will be one of the factors that is included in the EOI process is the ability for the provider to provide a continuous service, and it will be up to them as to how they respond.
Councillor?
Thank you. And lastly, I thought I'd flag an alternate for the council that I will be seeking that the expression of interest of the EOIs come back to the council for a report in substitution of point two.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thanks. Through you, Mr. Mayor. Could I ask whether the dual-use path that runs effectively from Fremantle to Mindarie is going to remain completely open in the vicinity of the Ocean Reef Marina throughout the construction process, or is it going to be effectively closed at any stage? Thank you.
Mr. Wilcott. Director.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, there have already been temporary closures of dual-use paths in and around the Ocean Reef Marina. The developer, Development WA, has provided an undertaking that access will always be available, but it might not be the normal cycle path or dual-use path.
Okay, thank you. With that in mind, and on behalf of the North Ward residents who may wish to have easy access to places like Mullaroo and further south, I'm interested in understanding why it's not under consideration to extend the trial to as far as Burns Beach. Thank you.
Mr. Wilcock?
Yes, thank you, and through the Mayor. Yes, it was a deliberate decision in discussion with the project team and in very brief discussion with Development WA to not bring the scooters within the vicinity of quite a detailed construction zone. There are large trucks, there are a lot of activity going on there, and it was felt that e-ridables probably wouldn't be compatible with the changing nature of the path and the construction equipment.
So just to clarify on that point, if I may, so it's okay for pedestrians and bicycles to access that area, but not for e-scooters. Is that correct? Thank you.
Mr. Walker?
Yes, and through the Mayor, I guess it, as an open path, it is already an open path available to those. If we are in the process of creating a trial, there has to be, I guess, an endpoint somewhere, and it was felt that that was an appropriate endpoint. There is not a lot of... you make a very good point about people from north wanting to travel south, but there is not a lot of desire line for people already on the scooters. There aren't a lot of shops up there unless you go quite a substantial way up. So it was a decision that had to be made. Again, a trial period, we didn't want to pick the entire of the city of Joondalup. Decisions had to be made and an endpoint had to be made, and it seemed quite logical to, if we had the ability to be able to avoid the risk of a new type of transport option interfering with construction equipment, it seemed logical to avoid that risk.
Further questions, if I may? Could you clarify whether you've had any engagement with the City of Perth regarding their ongoing trials? Thank you.
Mr. Wilcock?
Thank you, and through the Mayor. The only engagement we've had through the City of Perth has been in discussions with the fact that they originally appointed two operators, and one of those operators changed and went out of business. So the idea of appointing two operators versus one operator and their experience with that, the feedback was that two operators is good, but you do need to provide them a longer period of time and you do need more scooters and a larger number of riders. And so that's the engagement we've had with the City of Perth.
Okay, if I may continue, thank you. Just with regard to making sure that e-scooters are not going to be abandoned at the end of a ride on residential verges or on footpaths, I'm interested in knowing what measures are going to be taken place to avoid that, and in fact any other learnings, because we've got a great advantage here compared with other local councils who have already done the trials, we can actually learn lessons from those exercises. Can you perhaps summarise some of the lessons learned that are going to be an advantage to us? Thank you.
Mr. Walcott?
Yes, thank you, and through the Mayor. That has been one of the great benefits we've had in waiting a little longer to start this trial has been to be able to pick up the learnings from other local councils. We have spoken to one, a regional council, for example, who has made a decision to not have parking areas. They do have scooters literally everywhere on front verges and footpaths. their feedback has been that their community is okay with that because that's the type of tourist town they are. Our discussions have been with other trials such as Stirling. They started with no parking areas. They then started enforcing parking areas, and they've had feedback that the parking areas have been very, very good. Talking with the e-rideable providers that we have spoken to, we haven't spoken to all of those in the market, but the ones we have spoken to, has been around the use of technology to ensure that those parking areas are adhered to. So that is, if you try to leave the scooter somewhere where it's not a parking area, you can't log off or you cop a large fine. So people tend not to do that substantially. So it is technology that appears to be the approach. I think we would, as part of a trial, include in our expression of interest and include in our contract that we have the ability to be able to contact them and communicate them and give them a time frame to pick up a scooter that we see as being errant as well.
Thanks, if I may. One final question.
Deputy Mayor.
Regarding the schedule for implementation of this trial, and also I'm mindful of the development of the Duncraig Adventure Hub, which is intended for high utilisation by our youth and is very close to Marmion Avenue. I'm just wondering, when the hub is open, is it possible to slightly extend the geographical area of the e-scooter trial to cover the small distance from Marmion Avenue across to the actual Duncraig Adventure Hub? Thank you.
Mr. Wilcock?
Thank you, and through the Mayor. Yes, that would, we would certainly see, if the trial is not over at the time that opens, we would very much like to talk to Council about extending that. That makes absolute logical sense. That is exactly the type of activity that we want to connect with the e-scooter trial. If it's post the trial, when we lessons learnt and we come back to Council with the lessons learnt and new areas, I would be very surprised if we didn't want to include that as part of the geofence zone.
Thank you. That's all very helpful.
Further questions? Councillor Hutton?
Just a few questions. First one, how many local providers in Western Australia are there that provide this service?
Thank you. Through the Mayor, there are some very small minor providers, but there is a third provider has pretty much left Western Australia, so there predominantly are only two providers in the state that are operating at a level that we would consider to have the technology and the ability to be able to meet the needs we're looking for.
Given there is only two providers and we are proposing such a small trial area, do we not fear that we're effectively making it uneconomical for the provider that's not operating in the city of Stirling to make a submission towards running this trial?
Mr. Bookup?
Thank you, through the Mayor. So given it is a small number, we have had, it's been a long period of time, informal discussions both with the local councils who operated the same number of scooters that we have, and they've had very, very good responses. The trial size that we are looking at would be standalone for either of the operators.
Councillor?
Yeah, so I was just following on that. I suppose the point I'm making is that, yes, it would be a standalone trial, but one would suspect that, well, the question is has it been weighed up, the fact that it would be very uneconomical for a new provider to come in to operate in such a small area, and therefore we're effectively only leaving the door open to one provider to actually make a competitive submission?
Mr. Wilcock?
No, I don't believe so. I think the alternative provider would be extremely keen, and it would be have indicated that the viability is absolutely there for them to be able to provide the area that we're indicating.
Councillor? Yeah, following up from some previous questions, particularly around the charging and the cost of operating, given we do have such a large provider to the south and effectively extending their operating service into the city of Joondalup would require such a minimal marginal cost compared to the other provider, would we consider, if they are the provider we go forward with in a trial, potentially charging them a fee?
Mr. Wilcock?
Thank you, and through the Mayor. At this stage, it is proposed to not charge them a fee. When we go out with the expression of interest, we would be happy to include in there if they feel that for the conditions that we're setting, if they consider a fee, which may be along the lines of the comments made by a fellow councillor about a fee for a parking area or whatever it might be.
Just to follow up on one of the comments around business, I guess business registration, it was made effectively that there's nothing stopping a e-scooter provider from operating from petrol station to petrol station and offering parking services. I'm just curious where that would stack up against, for example, the city's responsibility around implementing health and safety regulations. Is there a way that the city could actually prevent such a thing from happening?
Swalcock?
Yes, that's been a question raised as, you know, we've had internal working groups come together and discuss this. You know, you can go on from time to time, bike hire places, you know, around Yellagonga, all this, it's exactly the same. You wouldn't actually have permission because you wouldn't know that they're who they are. They're just someone riding past in a scooter. The fact that they hired that scooter from a local bike shop or a local service station would not be something that the city would have any control over.
Just moving on
through the chair, Councillor Hutton.
Yeah, sorry. Just moving on to a slightly different line of questioning. We've obviously spoken about the difference between private e-rideables and the for-hire e-rideables, particularly around the functionality to geo-lock them and put certain requirements in place, particularly around the speed limits. One question that's been asked was particularly around helmets, where the scooters require you to unclick the helmet, but there's nothing actually making you wear it. Do we as a local council, through our ranger service or the like, accept responsibility for actually banning and policing and making sure that the regulations are being followed appropriately?
Mr. Wilcock?
Thank you, and through the Mayor. No, we wouldn't. So there's a couple of aspects to that question that I can touch on. One, we don't have a responsibility. We would also, in our contract and permit with them, would ensure that they are 100% insured for all of those activities and that they take all responsibility for that. And also, all the rideshare operators that we spoke to are now talking about technology where the scooter will look at you and ensure that you actually do have a helmet on. They haven't got that yet, but they're hoping to bring that in very, very soon. So, but the answer to your question, no, we would take no responsibility for that, and we would ensure contractually and legally we don't have responsibility.
Sorry, through the chair, just to clarify.
I do, please seek the call as you go along, please, Councillor Hutton. Next question.
Just following on from that, and just to seek complete clarity, if an individual using a hire scooter is driving up a shared pathway at the 25 km/h speed limit, and they hit the local resident who, you know, requires medical attention, are we saying that we would not be in any way be liable for allowing that to take place?
Mr. Wilcock?
Thank you, and through the Mayor. That has been the advice that we have received from the contracts that other local councils have. That has been the advice that we have received internally before we enter into a contract with an e-service provider, with a rideable shared service provider. We would ensure that we clarify that completely.
Yeah. Councillor? Yeah, through the chair again. Given the, large angst in the community about the way that e-rideables are being used by members of the community, contravening the rules and regulations, is there a way we as a city can allow this trial to proceed whilst also sending a clear signal to local community but also the state government that we expect the rules and regulations to be properly enforced?
Mr. Wilcock.
Thank you. And through the Mayor, we actually see by entering into and going with an e-rideable shared service provider that we are actually doing that. When we enter into this, we would expect them to do quite substantial, and the paper talks about quite substantial communication about what they are doing in our city and how they are expected to adhere to the rules. We would probably do a little bit of that as well to show people riding slowly and safely. I know a lot of people's experiences are different, but the shared scooters are really not as fast and are much safer than the private scooters, and I think we would probably communicate with our community the benefits of riding slowly and safely. That would be something we might take on ourselves, but we would certainly be a requirement of the provider in any contract that they must make communication about the safe riding of those scooters.
Further questions?
Yeah, and then finally, just flagging, I suppose, an amendment to the recommendation, basically to support WALGA advocacy for stricter enforcement of e-readable rules by the state government.
Mr. Wilcock or Mr. CEO? Or Mr. Perry, Director Perry? Just work with Councillor Hutton on an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, we can do that. I think we have the general intent of what's proposed.
Awesome. Thank you. Councillor O'Neill?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have a couple of quick ones. Being that this has happened in Stirling already, and often you drive through Stirling, you see what appears to be sculptures by the sea created by scooters. I'm just wondering, in relation to the GPS tracking and the stack up of scooters in roundabouts and things like that, not obviously wanting to see that in the city of Joondalup the way it is seen in Stirling, would the city be considering heavy fines for the operator if they weren't to pick up their scooters within a certain period of time? The reason I say that is an example. I drove past to a friend's home in Stirling. 3 days later, the same sculpture was there in the middle of a roundabout. So I'm wondering if the city has plans to adopt some sort of penalty system for the contractor to ensure that our city remains safe from hazards, trip hazards, and vehicular hazards as well, with scooters that tip over and fall into the roads, causing damage to cars, people, property.
Sir Wilcock.
Thank you, and through the Mayor. The short answer is yes, that would be the intention, that not only would we require them to have rules and requirements of the user and fines for the user if the user doesn't take them back to where they are, but we would also ensure that we have a direct and some sort of recourse on them, whether it be a fine or other, for them to pick up scooters as and when directed.
Councillor?
Thank you. Just one more, if I may. It's a question, actually, in relation to the charging of these electric scooters. I'm just seeking a little bit of clarification as to who fits the bill for it. Is it a subsidised charging station somewhere, or is it a standalone diesel generation system that the contractor is responsible for maintaining, or is it through a warehouse? I'm not sure how that actually works. I'm seeking some clarification as to how that works and who ultimately pays the charge on the recharge of these scooters.
Mr. Wilcock?
Thank you, and through the Mayor. Yes, so I made mention of a warehouse. So the e-scooter providers tend to have a warehouse where they take the batteries back to and they charge them. It's 100% their cost. We may require that warehouse to be in Joondalup. That might be difficult because we might not have the accommodation. We don't have a lot of warehousing in Joondalup. It would be a small venue. It is just the charging of batteries at their cost.
Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a question for yourself. In terms of, it was mentioned by Councillor Hutton, in terms of education, how extensive are we going to, obviously, said appointed provider might provide their own level of education to residents, similar to the one that occurred at Stirling, I think that was going to be at Scarborough. What is the city, in terms of comms and things like that, potentially might do to actually let residents know about, obviously, safe e-scooter rider behaviour?
Mr. Wilcock?
Yes, and thank you, through the Mayor. That is a very good point, because it is important that we don't double up on what the provider is going to do. So when we appoint the provider, we've indicated that they would come to us with a communications plan. And as is always with these cases, that would be something that we would work through with them. They might identify something that we feel is something that we are better off placed to communicate. And we might do that, and we might put other onus and won't put other obligations on them to say, no, we need you to do more in terms of communication. I think we would also, we have been working with the RAC and others who do e-scooter rider training and the like. I think this would be an opportunity for us to not just bring in the trial, but also to educate our community in both safe riding and then provide training for that as well.
Further questions? Councillor Raftus.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
questions through you. One of the comments made earlier was that this would be revenue neutral. Just wondering, could we get a comment around it being cost neutral? And what is the budget that the city has to undertake this 12-month trial, and what staffing would be required to monitor and provide feedback to the operator?
Mr. Wilcock?
Thank you, and through the Mayor. We haven't got a cost estimate for doing that. The city is quite regularly running expressions of interest and processes to start new systems and processes, so this would be done within staff's existing and available time. The feedback we've had from other local councils is once we run a provider who is looking to work with us, we set it up, we get the contract in place. After that, the feedback from other local government areas is that the impost on staff time is exceptionally minimal. With you know that they run their own show. It is really only the same as if there's a problem with any other area of the city, like there's a problem with scooters that we would get involved. So the costs are expected to be covered within the existing staffing operation budget.
Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. As a follow-up, I understand pretty much everything we do is covered within the staffing budget, but we do factor a cost for each of those items. So I was wondering, do we actually have a calculation of what we estimate will be the cost, because it's been through various comments that be monitoring, ensuring that there's no these things being dumped anywhere. So there's going to be a what I understand, and then we talk about education, communications. There seems to be a fair bit of money being tied with this, so I'm trying to get a clear understanding of what we actually are budgeting to spend on this trial.
Mr. Wilcock?
Thank you, through the Mayor. I could try and calculate that, and I'll take that on notice.
Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. Further, that the key part of this is reference to ESS is the term shared. So I'm just wondering, how do we open ourselves up for liability claims if we're using a reference to shared for this service? So we're not we sort of make implications that it's all in the hands of the contractor, but what happens when we get the city gets named as a co-defendant in a civil case?
Mr. Wilcock?
Thank you. Through the Mayor, I guess it's important. I think the shared in this instance is not a share between the city and the operator. It's that the scooter itself gets shared between users. I'm not sure if that's what you're referring to. The question earlier on was around insurances and the like. We will be working through this in a very, very careful way to ensure that the operator is operating somewhat at arm's length. We will give them the ability to be able to do what they want to do, like we give lots of other operators the ability to do what they want to do. We build roads so that people can drive cars on them. We allow bikes to ride on the shared paths, and we're now going through a process of allowing e-scooters to be used on the shared paths, but also to be parked on there. So we will work through that. Feedback from other local government areas is that they have worked through that, and that the risk is very, very low, and Walga and the like have issued advice around that the risk is not with the local government.
Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. Further question was raised earlier about these scooters being geo-locked, and yet being able to flow freely into the city of Stirling. So I'm just wondering, how do we actually achieve that? Because then we then are unleashing the restriction of geo-locking, which is one of the safety mechanisms we seem to make reference to. So could we have clarity around how that process would be able to happen?
Mr. Wilcock.
Yes, thank you, and through the Mayor. I guess, first of all, to answer this question, we'd have to make a presumption it's the same operator as the City of Stirling, so which is not something that is clear, you know, not something that is defined at the moment, but assuming that is the case, it is the scooter itself that is geofenced. So, if you like, the operator then just expands that single scooter. So, in theory, the rider can ride from Mullaloo all the way through to Scarborough, but the geo-fencing areas and the go slow and the no-go areas are the same for the scooter no matter where that scooter goes. The electronic nature of the scooter won't allow physically that scooter to go outside of the City of Joondalup's geo-fenced area. Likewise, it won't allow it to go outside the City of Stirling's geo-fenced area.
Councillor Raffles.
Thank you. The last one. If I could ask that we get some further detail within the heading of the risk management considerations on this item, because what I find in there is pretty vague, and it's just reference to how many of these scooters are around and what percentage use them, but it's not giving me any real clarity around how we are dealing with the risk faced by the city, particularly when we go on to page 63 at the bottom, where we make reference to potentially using, if we are able to identify, revenue streams to improve the safety on paths. So it seems to me that we are already identifying that...
I'm not looking for a speech, Councillor Raptor, so I'll take your question.
Yep. So in terms of getting clarity on safety issues, because we seem to identify that there are going to be safety issues on these paths, so we don't cover that off in the risk mitigation.
Councillor Raptor, again, question, please.
Can we get more information to meet that requirement, please? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wilcock, further questions? Councillor Ventura.
Thank you, through you. This is probably a minimal one on the scale of what discussed, but I can't help it. It's the brand and marketing guy in me. From a colour perspective and from a potential brand perspective, do we have the opportunity to choose the colour of the scooters? Because across the coast we see purple and orange, and they're kind of like, well, I would like to think that we can embrace the colours of the city.
I will just take the question.
Yep. Can we have a choice in colour, and can the city's logo be placed on helmets from a branding perspective and an opportunity in that area?
Mr. Wilcock.
Thank you, through the Mayor. I can look at whether we include that as a question in the expression of interest is probably the only way I could answer that. I think in the same way that we wouldn't necessarily put our brand on Uber vehicles driving through our city, I don't think we would necessarily tell an operator what colour to put in their vehicle. I think we can ask that question in the expression of interest, and I'd be happy to do so.
Councillor? Thank you. Further questions? Status of council decisions. Any questions on this item, 12.7? Councillor Raptus?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. A question regarding decision back in October 22 regarding getting a planning framework around respite facilities and accommodation. Just wondering if we had some time frame on that one, please.
Director Parry.
Three, Mr. Mayor, I probably need to take that on notice unless Councillor Lee had that at his fingertips.
Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. I don't have the specific date, but I can provide some more detail, but perhaps some comfort is that it is something that has been discussed. I recall that we presented an item to elected members just for some information on several different updates around various planning decisions, so I'll just refer back to those and see if I can redistribute that as well.
Thank you. Further questions? 12.8, minutes of regional council meetings. Any questions on this item? 12.9, minutes of the annual general meeting of electors. Any questions on this item? Councillor Chesser.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to flag that I will be requesting an alternative motion to motion 13 of the AGM of electors, basically to facilitate the city's environmental friends groups accessing any unallocated special purpose grants. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Councillor Kingston?
Yes, I was just going to flag that I've raised a number of amendments and alternates for the AGM, and it was just a question to yourself as the Mayor. On the council meeting, how are we intending to do this procedurally?
Thank you, Councillor. It's always the trickiest one to manage every year.
So in the first instance, I just want to state how much I appreciate you emailing that through earlier today. So thank you. I've mentioned many times in speaking to items in council meetings, as much notice as possible to colleagues of intent, which you've done today, and I thank you for that, Councillor Kingston. In line with that, my intention is to give you, so I'll get you to move your alternate, which picks all that, all of what you have stated in that, and everyone's got a good amount of time to consider it. After moving that alternate, I will work through all of the items essentially by exception. So it'll be open for debate. I would encourage elected members who have alternates, well, in the first instance, amendments that they want to move, to progressively move their amendments. Then it's general debate. General debate will be an opportunity, like I said, by exception, to discuss particular motions that people wish to, and where any elected member wishes to move an alternate, we will go through those by exception. Ideally, I'd like to not move 1, 2, 3, 4. Ideally, I'd like to be able to say, look, item 7, there's an alternate, or I don't agree with, there's a foreshadowed alternate to the motion moved. And then so we pull that out and vote, and then the foreshadowing can be put up and work through that way. That to me seems to be the most structured way to handle this one. If that's clear, if anyone's not clear on how I've explained my intent, happy to liaise throughout. I will take the opportunity, even though it wasn't the question, because I always try and arrive at what seems to be the fairest in a total sense, and that seems to be the fairest way to manage this on this occasion. For the previous item being the e-writables, for example, I note that you would sought an alternate. However, noting there that's a notice of motion from Councillor Hamilton Prime, I'll give her the call in the first instance, and that one therefore would have to be foreshadowed because that was, if you like, her initiative that got the... So it's not hard and fast. Always appreciate the question, but that's the intent for the AGM. Further question?
Yes, I just want to say thank you for the clarification, and then just following up, as all the other elected members are probably aware, I've put out a long list of small amendments and alternates for this, and if anyone has other advice on how maybe they could be worded better or drafted better, I'd appreciate anyone's input so we're not having to move just a whole stack of alternates on the night to make it simple.
As I said earlier, amendments are easier where someone wants an alternate. Please liaise with myself closely on how we'll manage that. Or happy to entertain them, but please liaise closely. If what any elected member is seeking to do can be done via amendment, that's going to be the easiest of everything to deal with, and please liaise directly with Director Parry and Kylie on that. Any further questions? Councillor Hutton.
Sorry for this being late. Just following on from previous councillors' interest that may affect impartiality, I am declaring that I'm a member of the Burns Beach Residents Association, which affects Motion 32.
Thank you, Councillor Hutton. Any further questions? Councillor Pizzey.
I have a number of questions for a few of these motions. Is that okay if I go ahead? First question is to Motion 3. Does the City of Joondalup have a responsibility to ensure the entertainment is age appropriate, as parents would not yet have seen the show that they are taking their children to?
Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. The programs and events that the city provides are delivered on an opt-in basis, so we do promote those programs or events to make people aware of them, and so people then choose to opt in based on the understanding that they garner from the promotion of the program. So in relation to children's programming specifically, it would be the parent or guardian would have to make a conscious decision on behalf of the child to attend and participate.
Councillor?
Just following on that, if I may. As a parent, when I take my child to the movies, I rely on their general rating, PG rating, M rating, and that guides me because I haven't seen the movie yet myself, or I'll ask other people who have seen it. But if you're putting on a show for the City of Joondalup residents that people have yet not had chance to see that, they are relying on us to make sure that it is age appropriate for example, because it was used tonight, I'll use the reading time at a library. In any show that we put on or get someone to read at the library, are we not then responsible to make sure that during the daytime that's it's focused at pre-primary children or younger, that that is age appropriate if we are displaying it in the city of Joondalup?
Director.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. So we do take into consideration the, I guess, the demographic that a particular event is being aimed at, and therefore we choose that programming based on the demographic and what we believe is suitable for that that demographic to participate in. Ratings for movies and the like, I believe, is done at the federal level, so that's not something that we necessarily are responsible for. But as I said, in terms of the marketing, we try to make people aware of obviously what the program and the event is, and based on where and when the program or event is carried out, as well as the information that we provide, we try to identify to an audience about who we believe would be appropriate to participate or attend.
Councillor.
Thank you. My next question is to Motion 5. Does the city have data where there is CCTV footage that there is a decreased antisocial behaviour?
Director.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. It's difficult to provide a full response to that or one that takes into account all the response or evidence, because antisocial behaviour largely is a police matter, and therefore whilst we do accept and receive reports from our community on antisocial behaviour, ultimately we do encourage people to make those reports to WAPOL, as it's their responsibility. What I can do is we can see if we can engage with West Australian Police to see if they've got any information that they'd be able to provide. And I can also see if there's anything that we have, but recognising that we wouldn't receive all information around antisocial behaviour because, as I said, largely it would be reported straight through to police.
Okay, thank you. Just on Motion 5 again, CCTV footage, some residents have concerns that their personal privacy is or may be hindered with the use of CCTV footage. What's happened recently in Oxfordshire, England, residents' movements were hindered in a 15-minute city plan and CCTV footage was used to implement this. What could the city do to alleviate the community's concerns that the CCTV cameras would not be used in this way to hinder their movements?
Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. I think one may be the fact that we don't have a 15-minute city plan in that context in terms of wanting to restrict people's movement. That's not something that we do. The other comfort I could hopefully provide our community is that our CCTV cameras don't use facial recognition, and so there's not the ability to track someone, if you like, in that way. So, as I said, there are two observations I can make in relation to that.
Councillor?
Thank you. That is helpful. In regards to Motion 11, I've asked many questions on this in the past, so my understanding is from the city that these services would be provided to the residents at no extra charge, as the state would provide it in the process of handing back the immunisation clinics to the state at no extra cost to City of Joondalup. They would. So, in effect, do you feel like this is a duplication of service, since City of Joondalup residents would get this if we didn't provide it?
I'm not going to give that question to the director.
Sorry?
I'm not going to give that question to the director. That's seeking an opinion of the director. That's for elected members to decide, Councillor Pizzi.
Oh, okay. It's just
Do you have another question?
Okay. Yes, I do. Just give me one second.
Just to explain, do you think it's a duplication of services? That's not a judgment for a director to make.
Well,
the recommendation is there. That's a decision for councillors to make.
Right, OK. So just in the recommendation, it said it didn't feel like it was a duplication, so I was just asking sort of a confirmation of that.
Yeah, which is in the recommendation, but, yeah. Okay. Councillor?
Just in regards to motion 20, sorry, my computer's died, so I can't have access to Councillor Kingston's request, but I'm just going to foreshadow that I'm going to request the CEO to develop a report on a friend's poor group to be developed. Sorry, I can't remember.
Thank you, and just noting your comment, were you seeking an alternate for number 11 as well? I think you'd flagged that with me earlier.
I am seeking an alternate for number 11, but I'll discuss with Councillor Kingston if we can come to maybe a motion that satisfies both of us, so we don't have to do that. No?
I would, yeah. I mean, Councillor Kingston's given very clear notice of intent.
Yeah.
And I know a number of elected members have had, have had time to consider that. These won't arrive now until the briefing pack. So, yeah, I think it's better that continues as is. And then if you propose the ones that you're seeking. I'm not seeking to then, because that would be essentially unfair for council, because then you get an omnibus of different changes that councillors haven't necessarily considered on the way through. So,
do you want me to say
seek them as separate alternatives if possible, please? Yes.
Yep, for motion 11, I'll seek an alternate motion to just have that service removed and not seek a report from the city.
Thank you.
I've just got a few more questions. I just want to get my bearings here. Just in regards to motion 33, it was requested that if questions were when questions are taken on notice at meetings, that if they were answered at the meeting, the community would have access to that answer. But when they're taken on when they're taken on notice, community members don't get access to the answer, only the councillors do. Could these questions, if not confidential in nature, be made available to the public?
Director? Harry?
Three, Mr. Mayor, the council would need to make an amendment to the procedures that it has for the council and briefing, or for the briefing sessions, which is outlined within the report.
Okay. I may foreshadow, does that mean we have to make an amendment to the meeting procedures that are being reviewed at the minute?
Director?
Three, Mr. Mayor, no, not to the meeting procedures, but to the procedures that are at the front of this agenda for the briefing sessions. It talks about the record that will be kept. There would be some other implications. This has been raised previously. If the information is to be provided within the council minutes, it will probably be a little shorter and probably to the point, whereas at the moment they are almost a note-taking and a lot more informal in nature within the briefing notes, because they are not a public document or for public consumption.
Okay, thank you. In regards to motion 34, is it a possibility that the city could send recipients on the Nosebay Registrar? Would they like to continue on the register each year so that they're reminded to do that?
Director Klassen.
Through Mr. Mayor, I'll take the question on notice. My understanding is that we do advertise the requirement to re-register. I think what I understand is, are you requesting, can we send out a text message to those people that you need to re-register now if you want to be, is that what you're seeking through, Mr. Lee?
Yeah.
I think that can be considered, and details provided in the back.
My next question is possibly asking an opinion again, but I'll ask it and I'll be guided by the chair. In recent times, the state government has had issue with previous recommendations of safe and effective. As we are relying on government body for information, is the city satisfied with the data available to them on the use of fluoride in the drinking water, given the information that was given to us tonight?
Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. When the city is considering any matter that relates to public or personal health, in the absence of us having our own specialists or expertise in that area, we rely on the advice and guidance of the relevant government agency. So in relation to fluoride, it was referenced earlier tonight, the NHMRC, being the National Health and Medical Research Centre, being the main statutory body responsible for medical research. So that is who we rely on, and that is who we follow in terms of various regulations and what we respond to.
All right, thank you. I have no further questions.
Further questions? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just something really quickly there in relation to point motion five. The statement was made that the CCTV cameras in the city do not use facial recognition. My question is very simple, yes or no. Does the city's CCTV cameras have the ability via software or, as standing now, the ability to activate or use facial recognition as it stands now?
Director Lee.
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. I would need to take the question on notice just to confirm we have had CCTV cameras in for a number of years, and as the technology obviously moves on, we upgrade cameras or we use cameras that are currently on the market that weren't there previously. I'll just have to confirm what cameras we do use at the moment and what functionality they do have.
Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you. Just one more. So in relation to the other statement that was made for security measures and the feelings of safety with CCTV cameras, and it was the statement was made in the officer's comment that there's the community safety and perception of safety, and it's reiterated over there. Is there any hard evidence that the city has been gathering as to indicate that these cameras are giving perception of safety or community safety?
Director.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. As I mentioned before, I will see what data or information the West Australian Police is able to share with us, as we don't receive all complaints or reports about antisocial behaviour. What I can advise, though, and potentially provide more information in the pack for elected members, relates to when we do survey our community on community safety initiatives such as CCTV and what their thoughts are around the use of it. So I can certainly provide that information to give some information on what our community feel in relation to CCTV, as well as trying to find some evidence from West Australian Police.
Further questions? Item 12.10, Annual Review of Register of Delegation of Authority. Any questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. As flagged, I'll be moving an alternate that's been circulated.
Thank you.
But I do just have a short question as well. Sorry, it relates to the... just trying to again get it in front of my laptop. But it relates again to the changes of the delegations which are being proposed by the officers for the planning delegations. There was a comment that spoke to the changes that were of a minor nature would not be brought to the council for planning matters. I'm just trying to find the exact page. As far as a change from the current delegations for planning, just if the director could comment on that.
Director?
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. I will just try and find the page number as well, so I can just review the exact wording, but certainly if Councillor Kingston finds it before me
and is able to point me to it, that may assist as well.
Yes, thank you. It's on page 228 of attachment, and then for attachment 12.10.1, and it says for the local planning scheme 3 delegations general, it says the change is to consolidate delegation 3.7.1 with 3.7.2. And then rationale, it says two separate delegations are unnecessary, but underneath it says, and avoid council having to consider minor departures from requirements to improve efficiency in sub-delegation process as well. So this statement about avoiding council having to consider minor departure from the requirements, could I get a commentary on that?
Director?
Thank you through you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you for that, Councillor Kingston. So they're effectively two changes that are happening there. So we are consolidating the delegations into a single planning delegation, and the purpose behind that is to make them more legible for our officers, for our applicants, as well as for council. In terms of the change to reduce council's consideration of minor issues, that relates specifically to a proposed increase to the threshold for parking and landscaping shortfalls that are currently referred to council. So currently for parking, there is a requirement for a decision to be made by council for anything that has a shortfall beyond our parking policy of 10% or more. We're recommending that be increased to 20%. So perhaps tonight is a good example. The item for consulting rooms on Seacrest Drive, Sorrento, is an example whereby it has theoretically a 20% parking shortfall against the policy. Because that's greater than 10%, that comes to council for decision at the moment. If council support our recommendation to change the delegation, that would be something that we would deal with as an administration.
Further question?
Thank you. And following on from the example from last night, when the city seeks to, under State Planning Policy 3.6, that's the infrastructure contributions, enter into an agreement with a developer to provide infrastructure in a public area, similar to this one here, similar to the late Little H Cafe situation where there's a proposal for a car park area to be placed in the public realm, and then a footpath would also be then contributed by the city and other associated costs with that. When the city goes to allocate capital works in addition to a planning approval or enters into a contribution agreement with a developer, somebody seeking a development approval, what are the current constraints about who can approve those development arrangements?
Director?
Thank you through you, Mr. Mayor. In terms of who has the ability to approve those sort of arrangements, it would, it's a big question and would have a number of variables, but broadly it would be the decision maker responsible for that planning proposal as well as any affected landowner. In relation to State Planning Policy 3.6 being infrastructure contributions, the intent behind that is to apply to a broader scope of infrastructure and certainly a broader area rather than a site-specific development. So if you were looking to do something under SPP 3.6, as I said, it would be more of a district-level or the like type of infrastructure contribution arrangement where it would be likely to be a series of infrastructure upgrades, not necessarily linked to one particular development, but based on a cumulative impact of development in a particular area that you would need to eventually upgrade whatever infrastructure that you needed to, as distinct to something like the application that council considered earlier tonight, where there's a very clear link to the need to provide that additional infrastructure, in this instance parking, as a result of an increase in patronage to a particular operator.
Further questions, Councillor Kingston?
Thank you, and just the last one on this point, which is about, it's, I guess, my line of questioning goes to is that ensuring that there is a sufficient separation of when there are capital works which the local government has paid for, which then assist elements of a development approval to be given or are complementary to a development approval. Do you believe that there is sufficient separation in the delegations, that there isn't inappropriate relationships being formed? What I mean by that is sometimes developers try and seek a relationship with an employee and speak to them multiple occasions to then encourage the local government to take particular action. So is there, do you believe there is sufficient separation?
Director Lee?
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. There are a range of measures to manage conflicts of interest. I'm happy to take that question on notice and provide the detail. I know we explored it in some length when we were considering a policy around this, and perhaps that might be the best way for me to respond this evening, is that I will find that report and issue that, and that takes elected members through the various ways and frameworks in place that manage certainly around the consideration of development proposals, how conflicts of interest are managed.
Councillor Kingston?
Yes, I just wanted to say I'd appreciate that response. That's not to say that this behaviour occurs at all.
It's not an opportunity for debate.
Another local Councillor Kingston, thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? We'll move on to 12.11, Corporate Business Plan. I will ask Mr. Deputy Mayor if you can join us. And Councillor Kingston, if I thought that was what you intended, I would have ruled the question out of order, so you can relax. Deputy Mayor.
So we're moving on to item 12.11. Councillors, any questions on this item? Councillor Raftis.
Thank you. Through you, if we change all these milestones, how do we end up with a report that actually tells us what we achieved for the year against what we set out to do for the year? Or just end up with a report that says we achieved everything that we now amended the report to say we were going to achieve?
Mr. Parry?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Deputy Mayor. A report will be provided. I think it's probably more relevant for the next quarter's corporate business plan, which will demonstrate whether or our achievement against milestones. As indicated within the report, there are reasons for some of the deferments or delays with regard to some of the milestones, and we try to pick those up within quarter four. What we don't achieve will be reported in that quarter four report. It will also be reported in the annual report. Where there isn't an achievement, there is the opportunity for this to be rolled over into the next financial year as well. So there is an indication there on a number of these where it will be rolled over to the next corporate business plan and indicators of time when that will be presented back to council.
Councillor Raftis, anything further? Councillors, any further questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.12, Outcomes of Community Consultation, Iluka Burns Beach Foreshore Reserve Management Plan. Any questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.13, list of payments made during the month of March 2024. Councillors, any questions on this item? Councillor Raftis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. A few questions, if I may. Stamp page 942 was a payment to Mr. Stevens, $1,450 for ex-crusher payment for garage damage from Birch Tree Branch. Are we able to get a report, a list of payments made under for such similar ex gratia payments for this financial year, please?
Director Humphrey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm aware of two payments made, and I'll provide the details of those two payments in the pack. I can't remember whether both were in the same financial year. but I'm happy to provide that information. Thanks.
Thanks. Confirming I'm the Deputy Mayor. Councillor Rafters, any further questions?
Yes, thank you. Stamp page 946. There's two payments to Breaksea regarding arts development grants. Would that be clarified? Because I understood we only approved one grant for $25K for them.
True to Humphrey.
Excuse me, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll have to take that question on notice.
Anything further, Councillor Rafters?
Yes, thanks. Stamp page 968, Jardine Lloyd Thompson Strategic OSH contract, $21,405. Could we get some more clarity around what that contract achieves and perhaps see a copy of it?
Director Humphrey.
Excuse me, Mr. Deputy Mayor, happy to provide the information. Thanks.
Thank you.
Anything further, Councillor Rafters?
Sure. Stamp page 950, Cognology, $27,302. The description is just Cognology, so I just wonder if I could get some clarification on that description, please.
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, Cognology is a service that we do acquire in the IT space. I will provide details in the pack.
Councillor Rafters, anything further?
Thank you. Yeah, just one last one, if I may, please. Stamp page 975, Movies by Burswood, $8,250 for the cost for cinema not running. Can we have some clarity on what we're paying for something to not run, please?
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, during the June Light Festival, we used a space that was ordinarily booked by that group. As part of the booking arrangements for the space to be used, we did provide compensation to the group as part of the booking process. I'll provide further details on the facts for that one.
Councillors, anything further on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.14, Financial Activity Statement for March 2024. Any questions on this item?
Questions on 12.14? Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. 12.15, any questions on this item? 12.16, any questions on this item? 12.17, Community Funding Program Round 2, any questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Yes, just trying to get to my notes, sorry about that. The first question is about the Padbury Community Garden, and this is their second grant application on page 191. Ian, could we just get a further breakdown of some of these items? So firstly, in relation to the signage at 3,392, that just seems to be, depending on what the size of the sign is, that sounds like an expensive sign, even if it was metal or powder-coated. So do we have any understanding of what that is or how many signs?
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Mayor, I don't have that information to hand, but I will provide it back.
Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Could we also get a further understanding of the limestone seating materials in install for 2,600 and why the particular specification for limestone seating, and whether that actually meets the city's requirements for seating in public areas?
Director.
Again, through Mr. Mayor, I'll provide the details of the application in the pack.
Councillor.
Thank you. And then the tactile ground surface indicators for 520, just trying to understand that. And then I presume this is about different levels and, yeah, any sort of liability implications for the site if we're requiring tactile ground indicators.
Director?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't believe the city does have a particular requirement for the tactile ground indicators. They're generally in places where there's a step or a curb or other trip hazard that might affect a person with limited visibility or visual ability. But again, I'll take the question on notice and provide the details in the back.
Councillor?
Thank you. Then returning to the first application on page 190. In relation to the advertising and promotions, 1,731, that seems to be a significant amount of money for an intangible. So I'm just trying to understand why was that amount recommended by the administration when that's probably composed of Facebook posts or maybe sponsor posts or in articles in the newspaper. So I'm just trying to understand, is that our usual practice? Because I thought we didn't usually approve it intangibles of that sort or that scale of funds.
Director.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Question related to advertising. It would be normal for a program or otherwise to involve advertising and that be considered as a part of a community grant. I'm happy to provide further details of exactly what the funding was sought for in the PACS.
Councillor?
And could we also get an understanding of the equipment hire at $1,902 for that one? And then also the supplier for the Welcome to Country and smoking ceremony, whether we believe $2,250 is similar to the prices that the city pays.
Director?
Through Mr. Mayor, the price for that is not considered unusual. With regards to exactly who will provide it, if it's provided in the application, I'll provide it to elected members, but it may be that it's an indicative cost at this stage.
Councillor?
Thank you. And then moving on to the Wanneroo Joondalup Lacrosse Club, and my query goes to a similar one. Their Welcome to Country appears to be $600 for the event that they were hosting, and the other one seems to be $2,000. So I'm just trying to understand the differences between the prices there, but maybe that could be on notice.
Director?
Mr. Mayor, it could depend greatly on the level of the service that's being provided, the complexity of it, whether the person who's providing it is a member of the club or otherwise. There's a range of considerations.
Councillor?
Thank you. And then on page 192, it says that Wanneroo Joondalup Lacrosse Club is seeking $1,195 for floodlights. So are these for people being able to play lacrosse at night and lighting the pitch? Is that my understanding? Is that correct?
Director?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the oval that the lacrosse club normally use does have lighting. I believe this is for additional lighting for a small ball national code sport, which does require additional lighting.
Council,
are these portable floodlights or not?
True, Mr. Mayor, yes, they would be temporary. I will note, though, that the city has not recommended funding for this particular application.
Councillor?
Yes, I'm just trying to understand that this. Can we understand who is the supplier of the floodlights and what is the quantity of the floodlights they're looking for? Because
we had the previous application. Councillor Kingston, don't speak over me.
I apologise.
You can ask that question in email if you wish, but noting, as the director said, the recommendation is not to approve this grant, and I think you're straying into another issue that this council has considered on another time, not the matter before us. So I'd ask you to confine your questions to the item before us. Councillor.
I guess it comes to the question of whether it's an alternative, whether to consider the floodlights at that price for the club. That's why I'm wondering, is it how many are required and so on, because it seems to be considerably cheaper than what we've previously approved under the programme. It could be value for money, if we understand.
Councillor, that's enough. Thank you.
Yep.
No more questions. Any further questions? Councillor Hill.
Yes, thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. It's also about the Wanneroo Joondalup Lacrosse Club. Could I just check, please, noting the name of the club, just confirmation of where they're based? Thank you.
Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, they're based out of a reserve in Greenwood.
In Greenwood, so that in the city of Joondalup. And secondly, given that the grant has not been approved, but there is a suggestion they may be able to apply through sponsorship, does timing of such allow them to apply for the 2024 championship in the time frame? Thank you.
Director?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, yes, I believe they have sufficient time to apply for sponsorship.
Thank you.
Further questions? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple of similar questions, one of them being obviously maybe an adoption of something for the lighting systems, but I'm just interested in the Welcome to Country smoking ceremony as well. My question is there different, like, for different venues, because there seems to be a varying range of charges, is there, like, different packs or something? I was wondering if that could all be explained as to why this one is $2,250, and yet others have been remarkably cheaper than this.
I think the director answered that question earlier. Councillor O'Neill, do you have another question?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Just noting the comment, which, again, was not appropriate because this is a briefing session. So for clarification, Director, was the lighting request for La Crosse to purchase lighting units or to hire them?
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor, my understanding is it was to hire for only for the duration of the championship.
Thank you. Any further questions? Councillor Hutton.
Just on the Welcome to Country and Smoking Ceremony, is there actually any requirement for the Padbury Community Garden to do a Welcome to Country and Smoking Ceremony?
Director.
To me, Mr. Mayor, I'm not aware of any requirement the city would have or any legislation that would require it. That is really a question for the people who are organising it. The city makes a determination based on the application made and whether or not the activities are appropriate. We're not always looking for something that's necessarily legislated for or required.
Further questions? We'll proceed then to item Councillor Raftus.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a question regarding the La Crosse one. Just seeking some clarity whether was there any issue that being refused or not supported on the basis it wasn't primarily based or supporting City Joondalup residents? Just trying to get my full understanding on that one, please.
Director.
Mr. My understanding is that the application was deemed more appropriate for sponsorship because of the scope of the event, and it wasn't primarily supporting activity within the city on an ongoing basis. Had this been, for example, a local competition designed to engage school children in La Crosse, it would likely have been supported. But given it's a national level competition, it was deemed more appropriate to for them to apply for sponsorship.
Councillor, further questions? Item 12.18, tender for Percival Football Club, T-Ball Club Room. Again, well, first of all, any questions, and if any questions are on the confidential item, please advise first. Councillor Hill?
My question...
Confidential attachment, I mean. Councillor Hill?
Yeah, I just without conflicting confidentiality, my question is around the relationship between the tender price and the budget. So if that makes it confidential, I'd rather have...
I don't believe so.
Okay. So I'm just seeking clarification of where the recommended tender price sits respective to the planned budget. Thank you.
Director.
Through Mr. Mayor, my recollection is the initial budget for this project was $800,000, so the tender price is approximately $400,000 over. But it's important to note that the council hasn't actually adopted the budget for 24-25 yet. And that's why the recommendation says that if the tender is accepted, the amount be included in the budget.
Councillor?
Thanks. If we can just get confirmation of that in the pack, please. Thank you.
Further questions? Councillor Hutton?
Is there anything that increased in cost as per the previous budget can be attributed to?
Director?
Through Mr. Mayor, the process when we put budgets together is we will receive estimates either internally or from quantity surveyors when budgets are prepared. Given the amount of time between when the budget was prepared and construction and the recent cost pressures that have been seen in the construction industry, it is likely there's the increase in cost of materials and labour for builders.
Further questions? 13.11, review of pest plant local law. Any questions on this item? 13.12, the local heritage survey. Any questions on this item? 13.13, the local planning strategy, phase 2 outcomes and phase 3 scope. Any questions on this item? 13.14, amendment to LPS 3, lot 36 and 28, Woodvale Drive. Woodvale, any questions on this item? Councillor Busy.
Just my first question is, most of Woodvale in this area is R20, R25. It is a very busy cut-through road servicing Wanneroo to the freeway. How will this city manage the increased road traffic in the area, especially at that high peak time during school pickups?
Director Lane.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. If I may, I might start and then see if Director Klassen has anything further to advise. But in relation to the increase in traffic on Woodvale Drive that's attributed to this development, particularly in the peak. It's predicted to generate 28 vehicle trips per hour in the AM peak and then 38 vehicle trips per hour in the PM peak. Our review of the traffic reporting that was submitted with the scheme amendment demonstrated that the road network, as it's currently designed, can accommodate the increase in traffic that this particular development or this subdivision would create. But I am aware, separate to this, the city has plans to undertake some modifications to Woodvale Drive, and I might ask Director Klassen if he can provide a bit of an overview on what they will be.
Director Klassen.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. So in the current budget and in the proposed budget for the Capital Works program, there is a local traffic management scheme for Woodvale Drive, which includes local traffic management between that. The detail of that was provided at the budget workshop, but I'm happy to provide a concept as part of the pack again.
Thank you. What estimated number of residential homes are there increased from going from an R20 zone to an R30?
Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. I note there was a deputation tonight that made the observation and some projections. I would need to take that question on notice just to undertake our own, just to clarify where our estimates would arrive at, using the, I suppose, the R code stated minimum and average lot size for the various densities. I do note that as part of the scheme amendment proposal, there was an indication that this development would accommodate 38 dwellings. I do note the deputation earlier this evening presented that that would be less than the mathematical possibility under an R30 code. So I'll take that question on notice and see if I can provide you with an estimate as well.
With a continuance of that question, does the city feel like going to an R30 would mean that there'd be less green space in and around that area? Woodvale by nature is by name green and woody, and residents prefer it that way.
Director.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. There are a number of ways, albeit reasonably limited given the size and the shape of the lot and the constraints that come with it in how you could do a subdivision design. I don't think there would be a significantly different opportunity to retain more vegetation under an R20 density versus an R30. I think the road network, as per the concept plan, would be fairly similar under both density considerations. What would potentially change is just the number of lots you would get there. And I do also note that as part of the development, irrespective of the density, there will be a fair amount of the site that is retained as undeveloped land, as it will be part of the Yellagonga regional space, and then there will be a portion of public open space within the site itself as well.
And just one more question, which I've asked the city before, and I wasn't able to get an answer, and I asked the developer again tonight and wasn't able to get an answer. But I'm hoping the city will be able to give me an answer on this, is that when the environmental assessment report was carried out by PGV Environmental, they did a reconnaissance of the flora and fauna in the area. Their reconnaissance showed no black carnaby cockatoos in the area. I do wonder at what time of day and how long the reconnaissance went on for and was conducted over. Can we get the methodology of the way that they gave this report?
I'll answer that. The person who did the deputation, to be fair to them, ran out of time to answer that correctly, and that was my fault. I should have given you the call on that question first. What they did say is, quite correctly, they've referred this proposal to the EP, to the Federal Department of Environment, which is a very, very high threshold. So my reading of that is they're essentially reporting that they didn't happen to observe any. That doesn't for a second mean that they're not saying it's Carnaby habitat. In fact, they're treating it as the most, at the most serious level of Carnaby habitat, and they've referred it to the Federal Department of Environment for approval.
So do their observations give any weight to what the Federal Department find?
Well, the Federal Department either makes a decision on whether to assess it or not, and they're bound by that. They're not sending it for advice. It'll be up to the Federal Department whether they are satisfied with the conditions or whether they wish to add further conditions.
Okay. And, sorry, can I just ask one more question in regards to how people will get into that residential area? Will they be using the road going, I can't remember what it is called now, sorry, it's gone out of my head, the residential area that's already there, that's a one street, will that be used as a thorough way to get into the other area?
Director? Hold on a sec. I have you, Councillor Chester. I'll give you the call next if you could switch off the microphone. Thank you. Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. The subdivision concept that came with the scheme amendment proposes two access points from Woodvale Drive that will serve the new lots and houses. I think they will be a far more utilised way to access the new houses than what Waterview Drive would be. They will both provide more direct access to the new houses. Waterview Drive, by the nature of its geometry, it's not a straight road. You sort of come in off Woodvale Drive and then there's a bit of a bend, although I do note Waterview Drive is intended to connect with the road network of the future development there, so it will be connected and it will be able to be used, but I don't think it would necessarily be the preferred access point.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll go Councillor May first. Oh, thank you.
I'm just wondering, it was raised about a lack of a structure plan. Is there a reason that a structure plan hasn't been done, or has there been one done that we're not aware of?
Director.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. There hasn't been a structure plan prepared. Structure plans are a useful planning tool in terms of guiding development over typically large tracts of land. Examples for within the city are Iluka and the residential estate in there. Burns Beach Estate is probably the more relevant and current one as well. We're of a view that the size of this lot doesn't warrant a structure plan. They are beneficial when there are multiple landowners, and it helps coordinate design and development over land that's in different ownership. It also provides a tiered level of planning where you are able to sort out some of the detail without going to a significant expense of drilling down into fine level of detail. This site lends itself to be able to go from a zone to a residential zone, so from a rural zone to a residential zone, and then allowing the subdivision process to be carried out, where the subdivision process will effectively pick up those sorts of requirements, but in finer detail than what a structure plan would.
Thank you. Councillor Chester?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a follow-up to Mr. Nolan's deputation, a question to the city officers. Has the proponent for the development on Lot 36, or in fact any of their representatives, made any request to the city up to this time for conditions to be altered, particularly with respect to tree planting and also not providing management plans until the subdivision stage? Thank you.
Director.
Thank you through you, Mr. Mayor. No, other than what was printed in this evening handout in terms of the requests and the purposes behind the deputations. That's the first indication that we'd received that there was a request to modify some of the details associated with the officer recommendation. But I do note it looks as though sometime between making that request for a deputation and including that information and this evening, the applicant or their planning consultant no longer seeks to modify any of the officer recommendation, which would indicate that they are supportive of the requirements for the various management plans to be included in the scheme and underpin the subdivision design.
I presume from that statement, Mr. Director, that you would not be inclined to reduce the approval. Thank you.
Director?
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, that's correct. We're comfortable with our recommendation for those management plans to be included in the scheme text.
Further questions? 13.1.5, implementation of the amended R codes. Any questions on this item? 13.1.6, proposed revocation of Greenwood local structure plan. Any questions on this item? And 13.2.1, Boas Place, philosophy and parameters. Director Humphrey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a very quick notice that the concept plan that's been included as an attachment was not provided to the committee. It's been provided following a request at the committee meeting that the attachment be provided. I just need to point out, too, the attachment is for the previous project. It is not instructive to staff on the development of any further projects. It's been included for historical context only. So with that, Mr. Mayor, I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions on this item? Councillor, Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thank you, and thank you for that clarification, Director Humphrey. So it's regarding attachment two. Could you please confirm, and I'm happy for this to be answered in the pack, what date the concept plan option 4B was actually endorsed, please? Thank you.
Director.
Through Mr. Mayor, I'd have to take that question on notice, but I believe it was around 2015.
Thank you. If I may, through you, Mr. Mayor.
Deputy Mayor.
Could we please also have a clarification in the pack on what the building descriptors are listed as A to H shown on that plan? Thank you.
Director.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor. Yes, in the pack I'll provide the legend that goes with the diagram.
Thank you. And finally, just in line with what you said at the start of this item, I think possibly Ms. Hewitt misunderstood in her public statement regarding option 4B that it's not part of the current business case suggestion, so just really confirming again that indeed is not an initial concept to be considered as part of this business case. Thank you.
Director.
Excuse me, that's absolutely the case. This was a project, many of, as become obvious once the legends provided to elected members, many of the elements in this plan have actually already been implemented at other locations in the city centre.
Thank you. Further questions? If not,
Mayor?
Oh, Councillor Chester.
Thank you. I was late with the mic on. It's my fault. Look, I wonder if I could just have a reminder from the staff about the level of reserves that we have for this project. And could I also ask whether we have a definite plan at this stage to engage with the state and federal bodies, politicians, to provide additional funding to push the project forward.
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Mayor, at this stage there's no confirmed budget for this project. The stage we're at is to look at the philosophies and parameters for the project, that is, outline what we seek to achieve. Presuming Council adopt the philosophies and parameters or a version of philosophies and parameters, we would then work out timings and budgets from there and whether or not we would need to seek state or federal support. Although I would preface that with, it is highly likely that state and federal support will be required at some point during this project.
Further questions? If not, we move. That's the end of the reports. We go to number 10, identification of matters for which the meeting may be closed to the public, which we have not utilised. 11, nope, I've jumped, sorry, wrong page. We already did that. Reports of the CEO, Mr. CEO. That shouldn't be there. I ignored it.
So there are no reports from the Chief Executive Officer in relation to committees. I beg your pardon, presiding member, but at this stage I can advise that the following report will be listed in the agenda for the next meeting of the Council, which will be the proposal for levying differential rates for the 2024-25 financial year.
Thank you. Urgent business, of which there is none, although if it is, it will emerge before the next meeting. Item 16, motions of which previous notice has been given. Do any elected members wish to flag their intent to raise a notice of motion? Councillor Ginson.
Thank you, Mayor Jacob. It was a notice of motion which I've sent to the CEO and the officers just about trying to formalise a crossing over on Ocean Reef Road between Joondalup Drive and Trappers Drive.
Thank you. Councillor May.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've just sent off a request for notice of motion in relation to electric vehicle charging within the Joondalup CBD and other key locations. That will come before Council within the main agenda.
Thank you. Any further notice of motion? In that case, declare the briefing session closed at 9:55 p.m. Thank you all.